Chris does.
Did you say ass stellum?
I said sass.
That's what we all say, so he might as well say it too.
Sassy stestellum. Sassy stestellum. And this is episode 128 of the Sassy and Lust podcast, available at sassyandlust.com. I'm going to buy that URL.
That sounds even more corny than our Sassy and Lust website.
TV and Lust and Sassiness.
And TV today, and Lust turned into a hardcore porn site so gradually I didn't even notice.
And today we have a guest. We have Jeremy Bernstein. What's happening?
Hey, what's going on?
A podcast, egg butt.
Oh, okay. I guess we could do that.
Did we interrupt something else? Or are you like doing something?
Yeah, I had a really
good giving him a heads up, really, if you ask me.
I was busy managing my Roth IRA when someone called me. I don't understand.
Who the fuck is this?
So, Jeremy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a pretty average Joe.
I agree. You are very pretty.
I'm super pretty. I don't know. I mean, I play a lot of games, pretty much goes without saying.
Gross.
I don't know.
Beautiful, you're hired.
Yeah, right? Big old nerd to me, Jeremy.
Boring life, so.
Are you recording in a bathtub?
Does it sound like I am?
A little bit.
Yeah. I like it.
Like one of those old-timey metal ones, you just kind of turn it upside down over yourself.
That sucks, because I'm in my hallway right now.
I've been ejected from every room in the house. I have to record
that. That's a weird place to put a bathtub, though.
Yeah. I thought it was really weird when I was buying the place, but I like it.
It's convenient. You can just step right outside a bedroom, and there's the bathtub.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on. So Jeremy is super average. He has nothing remarkable to say about
Remarkable about me. No, I don't know. I mean, I have like a typical IT job.
Oh, what do you do?
I do testing.
On like mice?
Yes.
Do you put like cyborg parts in their brain or something?
No, I build like automated tests for agriculture business.
That's really cool. All right. Well, what's your favorite game? Let's do that.
Oh, God.
This is the meanest question. Is it, Craig, you should not ask questions
that set the tone for the entire podcast.
That you yourself cannot answer.
My favorite game is Majora's Mask and has been for like 5 years. What are you talking
about? Here we go. All right, whatever. Fine. Jeremy, what's your favorite game?
I'm going to say it's probably in the Zelda franchise.
But I mean, that's excellent. Awesome.
What?
I think at least right now I want to say Wind Waker. But I don't know.
I love this man.
Do you have Wind Waker yet, or are you holding out till Friday?
No, yeah. I've been waiting for the physical one. I pre-ordered the one with the Ganondorf figure.
Yeah, me too. All right,
yeah,
well.
So I haven't
playing it anyway.
Well, yeah. Definitely. Although I played the HD one. I was actually at PAX a few weeks ago.
Mm.
So I did play it there.
Right on. Okay, well then that's Jeremy, everyone. He has a bathtub in his hallway and he's pretty sure he likes Wind Waker.
Pretty sure.
This past week has been really boring for me. You know what? I had a dream last night. Like now we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. I'm talking about my dreams. I had a dream last night that I had just gotten back from Japan. But subconsciously, like, back in my mind, I knew that I hadn't gone, and, like, so I knew that I didn't have the games yet that I wanted to buy while I was there. So when I woke up, I couldn't parse out the reality. So I'm like, wait a second, if I went to Japan, why the fuck would I go and not buy the games that are on my list? What did I do? And I was really confused for about 5 or 10 seconds. This is my life.
Oh, Craig. Never mind. I need
to
make a list.
You basically went and forgot to do everything you meant to do there.
I got home. Like, what did I do in Japan?
Everything was buy games.
That's my entire list. I also read. I read this book called "Slimed: An Oral History of Nickelodeon's Golden Age."
That's a really weird dream.
This is real life now. by Matthew Klickstein, and this was actually Jen Frank on Twitter mentioned it, and it's. I got it for like $15 on Amazon, and it's not like there's no real narrative, like there's no exposition or anything. The book is told entirely through like I don't know, as if you're reading like a movie script or something. It just has someone's name and then like a block quote. And I'm sure it's just a bunch of like it's basically like compiled interviews, and it's sort of structured in the way that makes it. Even though I'm sure all these people were not sitting in a room together or whatever on a Skype call together, it's sort of structured and edited in a way that makes it feel like a natural, like flowing conversation. It's actually really good, and there's a lot of like interesting stuff in here. Nickelodeon back when it like started back in like the 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s, it's kind of punk rock. Like a lot of the higher ups didn't even have offices. They were just like they had like shoestring budgets. Like, yeah, whatever, let's fuck it. Let's fucking do it. And now it's all like corporate and shit. Now it's all like about tackling Disney or whatever.
So, does the book go into detail about how hot Summer Sanders was?
There's no mention of Summer Sanders whatsoever in this
book. What? I don't even care about this book now.
I'm not even so sure Figure It Out is in here. I don't think they mentioned. I'm going to look in the index if they mentioned Figure It Out. Hold on. The only drawback is that it uses, like, I mean, obviously it uses, like, everyone's real name. They're not going to be like, Little Pete said, you know, it's like, you got Danny Tamborelli. So, but the
thing is, you got to know the actors.
What's up?
So you have to know the answer.
You have to know. There's an appendix that tells you who everyone is, but it's like, you don't want to keep flipping back to it. Yep, there is no mention of Figure It Out whatsoever.
Well, that's a shit useless book, then.
Figure It Out sucked, though.
Summer Sanders
is totally hot, but Figure It Out sucks. And who cares?
I would, like, watch that every day just because of Summer Sanders.
So, I watched it, too, but Figure It Out was an excuse for them to put all their actors together and have kids on for absolutely no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it was.
Here's my talent. My goat eats cans. Who cares? Summer Sanders was right there.
No, they had, I mean, Melissa Joan Hart and Lersa Olenek is in it, so, I mean, that's, what more do you, like, actually need, though?
Summer Sanders?
She's B-tier compared to Lersa
Olenek. God.
I'm just telling it like it is. What do you want me to say?
You're shredding my heart right now, Greg.
First Looney Tunes, then Summer Sanders.
I don't even, I can at least entertain the conversation about Looney Tunes. I can't entertain the conversation about Summer Sanders. She's B tier.
It's good. I feel like you're like messing with my woman here. Like,
it's,
don't.
I mean, she's good. It's good B tier, right? It's good B tier.
No,
she's a step.
I don't know. I'm kind of with Craig on this one. I don't think she's.
Listen, you can have the 57-year-old that does shampoo commercials.
Thank
you. I'll have Lersa Olenek. There's not an argument here.
I want that Gmail, dude.
But you are a little step down there on that one. That's okay. It's a good book, though. So, like I said, it's $15 on Amazon. I think the it's a little hardcover book. It's $20 is the price listed on it, but $15, $20, whatever. No, it was good. I killed it in like an afternoon, but I enjoyed it. But that's me. I had a really stupid dream no one laughed at. And fuck you. And I read this Nickelodeon book. And the Stumpnecks, can you guys hear the Stumpnecks outside today?
I have not heard them yet during this.
I can't.
Okay.
No.
They've been a little quieter, but like you can hear them through like everything's closed. My door is closed, my porch door is closed, all my windows are closed. They're so fucking loud today. Can't stand it. I hate these people.
It's gonna be football.
I can't wait till winter kills them off like the insects that they are. Or at least drive them inside.
Fish mash of two voices going on.
My bad.
It's all good. It's all good. All right. Well, that's me. Seth, how you been?
I did dick. Next.
Chris,
I shrink a lot.
I springed a lot. That's not, I mean, that's not, I can't really talk
that's
about
it. That's what he meant by dick, right?
Yeah.
No, he meant Summer Sanders.
Sometimes I just feel like walking away.
I'm sorry, insults with your waifu.
Thank you. Okay. No, I don't know. I just streamed a bunch. Video games and stuff. And took care of a dog for a day.
I streamed a little bit. I streamed some Kingdom Hearts 1.5.
I look at you and your fancy new video game consoles.
Moonbeam edition. I tell you, you gotta check out that Elgato capture device. I mean, it's $150, a little expensive, but it's pretty nice.
I asked on Twitter and the people voted for a DS capture device instead of the Elgato.
So did you order it?
Not yet. haven't deposited my check in the bank yet, so.
You have to manually go to the bank? What is this, fucking...
Direct deposit, man. Come on.
1875. I gotta hook up the horse and the wagon and take her down.
I know. My boss is, like, afraid of direct deposit. I don't know what's wrong with him. He only does checks.
Dang.
Lame.
It is lame.
Very lame.
All right. So, anyway, Chris, what have you been up to?
Not much. I've been sick all week. Sucks.
Actually, now that when you just started saying that, you actually sounded a little congested. I actually just noticed.
I am congested, so I'm surprised it took that long for you guys to pick up on it.
He's doing that shit where you call into work and you like make yourself sound worse. Like, oh,
guys, I gotta cut out of the podcast.
No. I'll tell you what he hasn't been doing: going to macaroni festivals.
I know there was
dumbass
I was supposed to go to where they had. A bunch of different homemade macaroni and cheese where you get to try them, and there's like a contest for which one is the best, and whoever's is the best wins a bunch of money or something. But I would get to try a bunch of macaroni and cheese, but we didn't go because I had to record a podcast.
Thanks,
Obama.
You bail out for like everything else, but you don't bail out for macaroni and cheese. Are you?
I know.
You,
what is wrong with me?
Are you fucking stupid?
Well, I bailed out last week, so I'm trying to commit. I'm trying to be here for the listeners.
We only
not for you, Craig.
Sundays
it's for the listeners.
Because you wanted to record on Sundays. We could do it on Saturdays. We were doing Saturdays before. Sunday was your day, Cupcake.
My day?
Yeah.
Saturday might be better for me. Switch it. All right, let's go back in time. We'll do this yesterday.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yesterday, I did go to a dueling piano bar, which was pretty cool.
What? That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I saw you posting that. What was that about?
Yeah, there's this this place in Milwaukee where they basically, at 8 o'clock on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, there's two pianos up front, and two guys just play piano all night. They take requests. You know, you bring up you know, whatever you want to hear, and give them, you know, a couple bucks, and they'll play it. And they definitely put some commentary in there if it's something they don't like. But you get to hear basically anything you request, they will play. So we heard, like, the Muppet Show theme. They played some Backstreet Boys. So Jackie was very happy about that.
I'm assuming Muppets was yours and Backstreet Boys was Jackie's.
She actually did not request Backstreet Boys, but she was very excited when they played it at random.
I see.
But she did request Muppet Show theme.
Okay.
There's actually one of those in Disney World, which is how we initially got into the idea of going to a piano bar, but then we found out there's one in Milwaukee, so figured we'd check it out, and it was a lot of fun. Had a bunch of drinks, and then came home and drank more and watched Seth's stream, so.
Yeah, and then he, like, talked about penis for an hour.
Yeah.
Surprise anyone?
The penis DR.
Yeah, that's generally how conversations with me go.
Yeah, I'm playing Demon's Crash. He's like, Zah, let me in Skype. I'm like, all right. And then just starts talking about dicks for, like, literally.
My word.
Literally an hour.
Wow. No, this place is apparently really big for bachelorette parties. So there was a girl with a penis tiara, which is like, what the fuck? And somehow that became a big topic of discussion in the stream yesterday.
Somehow.
Because you posted a link to it.
People were asking about it after I mentioned. Actually,
we're all like, Chris, stop. This is getting. He's all like, I'll penis TRU. And he just kept going.
I don't know. I was so drunk, I really don't remember how last night went.
It wasn't full of penis. I'll tell you.
I want a penis tiara.
Yeah, you would.
Love penis.
I would maybe wear it to my regular bar, maybe.
I was saying, sometimes you gotta let people know that A, you're a princess, and B, you love penis. And, like, what better way to do that than with a penis tiara?
Well, I actually don't know if any of those things are accurate. But
Oh, then you don't get to wear one, Craig.
That's fine. You know what? So be it. Heavy is the penis that wears the tiara, I guess.
I think that's
I read that in a fortune cookie. So, Jeremy, what have you been up to? How you been?
I've been good. I've basically just been working, and that's about it.
I'm a little jealous. I'm a little jealous of employment these days.
Yeah, well, I was unemployed for a good while. I quit my old job back in November.
Oh, wow. So when did you start this one?
I just started in July.
Dang, yeah, it's a little while, huh?
Yeah, so I was riding the unemployment for a little bit, but then funds were running low, so I found a new job.
He's hanging out for a while.
St. Louis. So I went from the East Coast to now in the Midwest.
Why would you do that? Why would anyone do that to themselves?
Fuck you,
yeah. I'm still not in favor of it, but it was.
Something I did is basically the best reason of all, a girl. So fuck that.
And I did it.
A job is a pretty good reason, though, in the scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, I basically did it because I had a connection, and it is good pay, so.
All right, well, that works. There's not a whole lot here. I don't know where you were living before. I mean, I live on the East Coast. There's nothing.
I was in North Jersey. So.
Oh, okay. So not too far away from me. A couple hours.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I applied for, like, a bank teller position the other day. Little bit above, like, bank teller. Like, bank teller plus or something, because they needed some certification for something. I don't know. But it's like, I mean, not to say that being a bank teller is below me, but it's certainly not my field or anything. I don't know anything about it, but, like, that's, it's just such slim pickings. It sucks.
Yeah.
So, good on you. I guess if you got to move, you got to move. Like, I don't really have a whole lot nailing me down here, but I don't want to go to the Midwest.
I'm not going to lie. I'm still getting acclimated here, but I would much rather be on at least one of the coasts.
Yeah, I mean, do you know anyone there? I mean, did you just kind of like, how old are you? Just kind of like up and move and like
throw? I'm 24, but I actually coincidentally knew a few people here through, I'm a musician also, so I knew people.
Hey, Jeremy, is there anything interesting about yourself? Nope, I have a bathroom in the hallway at the end.
No, I don't do anything except for
play music, move halfway across the country, go to PAX.
Nope,
nothing interesting.
See, now that I think about it, is that you rocking out on the guitar in your Twitter picture?
Yeah, it is.
Who'd you think that was?
I don't know. It could be anybody.
No, I knew it was him, and I was gonna be like, "Yo, so do you play an instrument or something?" But I left it alone.
Yeah,
yeah. Obviously, didn't want to talk.
I haven't done a lot with the music recently. I was in a band in like high school and college.
Gotcha.
But I haven't done anything in a couple of years. I've actually been thinking about starting like a YouTube channel for some stuff.
Do it.
So yeah, I actually started planning some of that stuff this week.
Wow.
So hopefully I'll get that started up soon.
Yeah, I say go for it. All right. Well, that's how we're all doing. Let's talk about some video game news. Not a whole lot that happened this week. Other than Valve dropping a bunch of bombs, I guess. Valve announced a Steam operating system based on Linux. The mythical Steam Box, now called Steam Machine, which is basically just a computer. Like, it's a computer that any manufacturer can make or something, and it comes with Steam OS. Is that an accurate assessment?
Did they even say any details on it, or just that
machine? No, it's basically a Steam machine. They're working with other manufacturers, and it'll come in different configurations with different prices. I'm like, oh, like a fucking computer. No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it can run Steam, Greg.
I know.
So, a computer.
It's high performance that's optimized for gaming, for the living room, and for Steam. I'm just reading their blurb.
Yeah, my Mac is like that, though. My Mac.
Is it optimized for the living room, Craig?
Actually,
it's not optimized for gaming, that's for sure.
But I'm... Nice. And then they also announced their controller, which ships with Steam machines, and I suppose you'll be able to buy it separately. It has dual clickable trackpads, where normally analog sticks would be, and a small clickable touchscreen in the middle.
It looks like a boombox.
I thought they looked like speakers, right? It looks like a little, I should connect this to my iPhone and just blast music at my work desk or something.
Well, I think it doubles as, like, not necessarily speakers, but, like, the motors and stuff.
The what?
Like the motors for, like, rumble and, like, what's it, like, haptic feedback.
Yeah, they have haptic. Yep, it does have haptic. And those the trackpads are actually clickable, and they're region clickable. So, I mean, there's quadrants, so you can almost use it like an actual clickable D-pad. There's no tactile feeling to it. You're just clicking on a giant disc, but you can use it like a D-pad.
I hate them. I'm old, and different stuff scares me.
Different stuff scares me. Well, I guess, on the subject of the controller, I'm super skeptical of the whole thing, actually, all three of these things, and I'll talk about it a little bit more. But the controller specifically, the button arrangements weird me out. The face buttons, the action buttons, they surround the center touchscreen. So there's two on the right side, right where your right thumb would be, and then two on the left side where your left thumb would be. That seems really awkward to have to lift your left thumb off your primary movement input to press an action button. And now if you use them like trackpads to play like a strategy game or whatever, where you're not moving around like you would like an analog stick. Yeah, maybe I could see that, but like a 3D action game you're playing on Steam? I don't know. I don't see that. Apparently, there's also buttons on the back, like underneath where like your, I don't know, like middle finger would be.
Like down low on the handles.
Yeah, down low on the back of the handles. And so, people are saying, well, those could be substituted. I'm like, yeah, but that would feel like kind of like a weird trigger, but like it would feel like a trigger. I don't know, like that sensation, I just...
Well, not to mention the grips on the thing look massive.
Yeah, they do.
They do. But people have said they feel comfortable. I don't know. Apparently, the control is pretty small. Like, a picture of the prototype was leaked. And it actually, the control itself doesn't look that big once it's in someone's hands. But, yeah, because there's no shots of it, like, actually being used. It's like that one, like, I mean, I don't even know if that's a render or what, but it's just that one image of it that they have, really.
It's on, there's a picture of somebody holding the prototype on Steam's own webpage for the controller.
Oh, so Steam.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like down at the bottom of it. And,
maybe it wasn't there before, maybe I missed it. Yeah, I mean, the prototype doesn't look that big, so if it's about that size, I think that's probably okay.
It looks a lot smaller than I thought.
Yeah. But the button placements, I don't know. I mean, I like the screen. I like the little clickable screen. I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. Very like Dreamcast or Wii U-ish. I like that a lot. And the trackpad thing, like, I don't know. Maybe that's great for like certain PC games, but I'm really skeptical of playing like a 3D action game with those or like.
I had a Sega Genesis controller when I was younger called the Turbo Touch 360.
Yes.
And that controller was like a touchpad and it was fucking awful. But to be fair, I mean, that was a long ass time ago and it was like, trying to equate some sort of analog touch to digital movement or something.
Right. But, I mean, it could be total. I mean, that's the thing. That's why I say, like, I'm skeptical and I'm not saying it looks like shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it could totally be usable or, you know, it could totally be great and it's just a period of adjustment. I don't know. But it's just, I look at it and I think, like, a touchpad, like, without that tactile feeling, like, that's just, I don't know. I feel like you lose it. It reminds me of a lot, like, playing, like, on an iPhone.
Yeah. The resistance from an analog stick, I think.
You can haptic that shit out of the thing all you want, but at the end of the day, that actual physical resistance, I don't know. I've played iPhone games. It's obviously it's not exactly like that, but I'm skeptical.
They definitely did it just to try and replicate having a mouse.
Right, they were trying to. I mean, as far as controllers go, that like try to keep in mind all the different kinds of games you can play on a computer. Maybe there's no other better way to do it, and I'll give them that. So with that in mind, like being able to play like strategy games or, you know, point-click games and 3D action games and 2D side-scrollers, maybe that is the best way you can do it without having a really disgusting Frankenstein beast.
I do not want to play 2D side-scroller on this controller.
Neither do I.
Yeah, that's my concern. That's my main concern with it, because a lot of the stuff I have on Steam is from, like, Humble Bundles and indie games and things like that. So, I'm interested in the Steam box, you know, if only because I have a Mac, so a lot of the Steam stuff isn't available to me.
Yeah, that's my...
But this controller, I don't know if it's going to, you know, appeal to the kind of games that I generally play, so...
That thing's going to be running Linux. Not everything's going to be available to you on that either.
That's true.
I mean, not unless it's converted, but it feels like, well, if they're not going to convert it for Macs, why are they going to convert it for a highly specialized PC either that's running Linux? I don't know.
Right. So,
I mean, that's what makes me skeptical about the whole bunch of things. Like, the idea of having, like, a Steam box, like, that's fine, or the Steam OS, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it, and I don't think it's going to none of these things are necessarily going to flop. I just feel like, you know, they're marketing these things as for, the TV and for the living room. And people who play consoles for a reason. They're cheap, and they're easy to hook up, They're easy to pop in your game and play. Computers aren't as hard as they were back in, like, you know, 1998 or whatever. But, for that level of flexibility you get in computer games, there is also, like, a layer of complexity that goes along with it, and which drives some people. Well, even me, like, I know how this stuff, or I can look up how this stuff works. I don't want to. I just want to pop in my game and play. I want to do this. So,
I'm assuming with SteamOS, like, games will be able to automatically read the hardware that they're running on, and you won't have to fiddle with
maybe
system settings and such.
Maybe, but you're still talking about machines that are. I mean, you're talking about something that's basically a flavor of Linux, and people might say, if this sells well, people might start converting their games. To run on SteamOS. I mean, what's really cool about SteamOS is that you can now stream your games to your TV, which is great if you already have a PC that is capable of running those games. Cool. But if
they run on the PC, right?
Right. So, but this is the idea is that you're putting them on your TV now.
How are they streamed to the TV?
Oh, I would imagine over your network?
Yeah, I think it was Wi-Fi.
Okay.
But, like, you're talking about, like, different boxes with different configurations, a Linux variant, and a really strange, foreign-looking controller. I'm not saying that these things can't be successful or even good. I just don't think they're going to speak to the sort of people that buy consoles. It seems like this speaks to the audience that already has Steam, which is, admittedly, a big audience already. I don't think they're going to broaden that audience, though.
Yeah, I think
even with that, it's specialized though. Like it's targeted for the people that are hardcore Steam players, not even like people that, like Chris said, like just downloading the indie bundles. Like that's mostly what I do with Steam because I have a Mac.
Yeah. Yep. Me too. Yeah. Absolutely. And there's only a handful of indie games that I miss out on. Like I'm not interested in buying like big name games. Like I'm not going to start buying like my big blockbusters on computer. Even if I had a PC, I still just want to play them.
Right.
On a console. Because I like that ease of use that consoles have over computers. But, yeah, I just don't... It could do well. These things could do well. I just don't see it expanding the audience in the way that it seems like Valve wants to do. By marketing them as, like, living room TV devices. I just don't... but I could be wrong. I don't know. They seem a little too complex for the sort of people that tend to buy consoles, in my opinion. I know because I am one.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everybody's already playing Steam on their PCs is going to keep playing Steam on their PCs. So.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see. The power of Gaben can surprise us all.
That's true. No. I'm not being down. I'm just unsure. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
The Shadow of the Eternals guys finally...
You forgot already, Craig.
I did already, Craig.
They finally gave up on development of their game, it seems. For the time being, anyway. I guess after two failed Kickstarters and funding on their own website and that whole thing with their co-writer of Eternal Darkness being a PDF file, then I think they finally gave up.
Yeah. That whole project was just mired in difficulties, I guess you could say.
It seemed to have gone from bad. Yeah, it went from like bad to worse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
think it's not happening.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Two failed Kickstarters. I mean, you get and then, the pedophile and what's his face? Fuckface McGee. From Silicon Knights involved.
Dennis Ayuk.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there's no way they're getting off the ground. I mean, I like Eternal Darkness. And it's weird because I thought that game was, like, I don't want to say unanimously, like, appreciated. It wasn't, like, ubiquitous or anything, but I thought that was a generally well-liked game. And, you know, I've talked to people more recently, like, yeah, fuck that game. And I'm like, wow, I don't know. I didn't realize those people existed. But all right. I like that game, and I would like to, you know, it'd be cool to see a spiritual successor to it. But there's no way in hell that I'm going to give money up front to Silicon Knights. And Silicon Knights, you know...
Part 2.
That's not... I mean... Yeah. Nah, that's okay. Okay. Yeah.
Would be cool to see. I just wanted other suckers to fund it for me. See,
yeah, exactly. Like, I would have paid money for it if it came to fruition, but I'm not going to front my money for it. Hell no.
Same here.
No way.
Yeah, I never even played the first one, so I'm not funding that.
Well, if people who played it won't fund it, like, we can't blame you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it was announced today that the composer for Mega Man 2 is going to be the composer for Mighty No. 9.
I thought this was known. Wasn't this known?
I could have sworn that just came out like today or like last night or something.
I think the composer for Mega Man 1 was already on board.
Oh, okay. I can't remember her name, so.
And then people went ape shit because people love Mega Man 2's music.
Okay, so we got a whole bunch of Mega Man music makers.
It really sounds like the project
is 2.9 million. Holy crap.
I want some handheld versions. Why is it so expensive to get on handhelds?
Why are the handhelds more like the last stretch after the next gen systems?
It's so far out of the next gen systems.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, you know, the talent behind the project is shaping up to the point where, like, even as someone who doesn't really play Mega Man games, you know, I'm actually pretty interested. It looks pretty nice. But, man, these stretch goals are ridiculous. Jesus Christ, man.
I mean, they are up there. Wonder how long
like
they're going to get.
Like, 3.5 million?
How
long
is that right now?
There are some people that would, like, do projects and be like, yeah, we'll port it to everything for 3.5 million or whatever the hell it is. Like,
yeah.
You want it on a ZX Spectrum?
Yeah.
Boom, done. 3.5 million can do that.
Even WayForward has it for like all the systems, just for their initial, first goal.
But that's things like that. Like, I mean, obviously these things are all going to be different. Like, different projects are going to require different kinds of money. But it's just these stretch goals are ridiculous. And you look at some of these other projects, and like, I don't understand where they get off asking for that much.
He's like, I'm Inafune, bitch. Give me money.
I know that Jules Watson from Renegade Kid, like, offered to do it. You know, I mean, I don't know anything about their finances, but they seem to get along with their, like, little small projects just fine. I can't imagine it'll cost $1 million for them to port that to, like, 3DS or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know where they get off doing that, but that's cool. That's it for news, I guess, unless anyone has anything they would like to add.
I have nothing.
Nope. Nope.
All right, cool. So now we are going to do mailbag. If you want to get involved with the mailbag, where you can drop us a comment, a question, tell us what you've been playing, whatever, you can check out tmos.net. Click on the mailbag section.
Don't post it on Facebook.
Don't. I know people still pop. I'm like, hey, let's do stuff in the mailbag. Like, so what do you guys think about Mario? and I'll take it because like I would have to be a dick to see that and go nope. But yeah, no mailbag. Y'all voted for this. Y'all wanted to do the website, so that's what we did. Come on. Turbo Snail says, sup, guys? Just wanted to say, I listen to your podcast while I take a bath every week. It is the highlight of my week. So does he take a bath just once a week? Because I read this, and I'm like...
That's the only time he bathes himself, just a bath once a week.
Couple of candles.
I mean, you guys don't release the podcast for a few weeks.
He forgets.
It's good for the environment, though. We're helping the planet Earth.
How
are
we not releasing the podcast? V-Sigma 100 says, what are you expecting from the upcoming consoles? All right, so this is sort of two parts here. We'll talk about that. I'm expecting a really huge divide between big blockbuster games and indie games. Like, you're not going to see almost anything in the middle anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, there's been some episodes where we've lamented that, but I'm actually starting to feel more and more, like, I'm not that perturbed by that, because the sophistication of indie games are getting to the point such that I don't really feel like I need those B-tier games anymore.
I think indie games are going to reach that B-tier status soon.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, I still like those games.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. So, even though I still like B-tier games, because it's like exactly in the middle. Like, they have, like, the weird, sometimes weird off-the-wall humor and design sensibilities of an indie game, but also, like, the sort of, I don't know, bigness of a retail release. I don't know how else to put that on the spot.
Said, I don't know right now, like a white girl. It was really funny.
I don't know.
I like the way you said bigness.
Bigness.
Oh, God.
I don't know. I don't know how to put that. But it does seem the B-tier games seem to walk that line between the two really well. But indie games are kind of creeping up onto that status all their own. And I just can I live without like another Never Dead? You know, in place, you know, with like Transistor from Supergiant in place of that? Yeah, I think so. But it reminds me of Honda cars. I drive a Civic, and when I was buying my car, I actually wanted a Honda Fit, because that's Honda's like low end car. Unfortunately, I live in a Navy town, so all the Navy folks buy the Fits because they're cheap. So it was like an 8-month waiting list for a cheap Honda.
Jeez.
But that's because Civics used to be Honda's low-end car, but they're not anymore because Civics got this really good reputation. Honda kept improving them. My Civic cost me over almost $20,000. They're not really low-end cars anymore. They're, you know, low-ish, I mean, but they're not, you know, where they used to be. And so sometimes I see, like, indie games being, like, that sort of, like, that low-end car, like this affordable thing, you know, this affordable experience that you can get something out of. And now they're kind of creeping up to where Hondas are now, and you're going to be paying more, and they might be like sort of like a product of their own success, both in terms of the positives, but also the negatives.
So what you're saying is in 30 years, we're going to be like, where are those indie games?
Yeah. Almost, yeah.
Everything's,
where
all
are
these AAA indie games are killing me.
Where are the Honda Fits of gaming? So yeah, I mean that's I can almost see that. I mean just look at the kinds of games, like look at like Xbox Live Arcade. Look at the sorts of games you're playing, like Geometry Wars, and like what's that one that comes with it, the one where you rotate the colors around?
Hexic.
Those are the kinds of games you were playing when that first came out. But now you're playing what is this, Two Brothers or whatever it's called? Brothers? I don't know what it's called.
Yeah.
You know, the indie games that you can download, they've increased in sophistication, they've increased in price. But you know, the teams are getting bigger. The cost of these games are becoming higher, and I think that's a dangerous road. We got to be careful with that.
Well, yeah. When I was at PAX, you mentioned Transistor. Transistor had a bigger booth and presence than the entire indie booth.
Wow. But that's being published by Warner Brothers, isn't it? So I mean, Warner Brothers is.
Well, yeah, but they're still hardening it as like the creators of Bastion give you this new indie game.
Right. Yeah.
And I'll give them it was really good. I'm looking forward to it. But it didn't feel like an indie game. It didn't have that presence.
Gotcha. Yep. So I mean, like those sorts of indie games are going to take over for the middle tier, the B tier. And, I mean, that's a good thing, as long as, I mean, I just don't want to wake up one day and see, like, the indie scene, like, becoming the new AAA scene, where, like, yeah, we cranked out the first game in our franchise with just three people in a garage, but now we have a team of 200, and we're coming out on all platforms, and look forward to the multiplayer DLC map packs. Cool. Like, no, I actually don't want to do that. That's fine, I'll pass.
I think we might get, like, a perfect era for a good, like, 10 years, though, where it's, like, Super Nintendo time all over again.
You think upcoming? Because, I mean, I think this past generation has actually been very... There's a lot of things you can complain about the past generation. But the past generation actually gave us an amazing array of variety and quality and quantity. Like, I don't think we've ever seen anything like this past generation.
Yeah, I feel like we're in that time right now.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just jaded, then.
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I look at everything you can buy. I mean, there's just a crazy variety in prices, in genres, in themes. Like, something like Gone Home, that wouldn't have existed 10 years ago. That's crazy. That would never exist in the Super Nintendo. You can't play something like Call of Duty and Gone Home. But you can. This year, you can play Call of Duty and Gone Home. Same year. It's nuts. And so, I mean, there's a lot of things you can complain about this generation, but it's been, I think there's just a lot of great stuff out there. And I think it will continue into the next generation. So I mean, that's what I personally expect from the upcoming consoles is a lot more focus on blockbuster experiences. Look what we can get out of these 8 gigs of memory, and you're also going to see a lot of great indie games filling that B tier hole that's sort of widened. So I'm excited for that. Do you guys have anything you'd like to add in terms of expectations for the upcoming consoles?
So new consoles coming out.
Nah, I don't know. It's gonna be the same shit. Better graphics.
Man, you are cynical and jaded, ain't you?
I don't know what's wrong with me.
Grumpy pants today.
I think so.
Are you guys still planning on getting the new consoles at launch?
I don't think these two are.
No, I was never planning on getting either at launch.
I had a PS4 pre-ordered. I think I'm going to cancel it just because I don't have enough time to play the games I have already. So
yeah.
I'll probably wait.
I have both pre-ordered. But, I mean, like, I don't have a job, so should I buy these consoles? I want to buy them. I want to buy them both. I still want to keep both of them. But it may come down to that I may not be able to get either one. I don't think that'll be the case, but if I had to pick one, it would, at this point, it would be the PS4.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just PS4 pre-order.
There's just nothing I want to play at launch.
No, so. That's fair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The releases for both of those, the launch releases for both of those systems, is pretty dismal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Dead Rising 3, I think. Is Crimson Dragon a launch title?
It is.
Alright, I want to play those two, but not enough to buy a freaking Xbox.
There's rumors, I thought I read rumors that Dead Rising 3 might be coming out for 360.
I saw those rumors, I think that was debunked. But
it was debunked,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's totally plausible, given how many of these games are actually going to be appearing on both generations, which totally devalues the new consoles. Like, buy your new consoles, but hey, like, five of these games are going to be available on the consoles you already own. Where's the incentive?
And it's the five high-profile ones.
It's the most high-profile ones. Like, who the fuck is going to buy an Xbox One to play Crimson Dragon? Me? Seth? Maybe? But that's about it. The world's shortest list? anybody want to add anything to expectations for those consoles? Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Also, what are your thoughts on Valve's recent announcements the past couple days? Steam OS, Steam Machine, Steam Controller. We've already talked about that. Hopefully that answers your question. Michael, the Objo, says, hey guys, just wanted to know, with all the people who want Platinum to be second party developers for Nintendo, what developers would you like to see as a second party developer with Nintendo?
I think we've had this question.
We probably have. What did we say?
We have a lot of repeat questions over like 125 episodes.
That's going to happen. But I mean, I can't even remember what we answered.
I said Next Level Games.
Are they not?
No, of course they're not.
No, they're definitely third party.
Oh, no kidding.
They do some licensed stuff. Like, didn't they do like one of the Captain America game or something?
They did Captain America. Yeah, they just do licensed crap whenever they're not working for Nintendo, pretty much.
Then they should. I agree with that. That's a good idea.
That's my answer. That's all I got.
I think that's everyone's answer.
Yeah. I think I actually asked this in the past. I think I said Hudson. They're even still a company.
They merged with
Konami.
They're
owned by
right?
Konami, I think, right?
They were owned by... I think they, like, Konami got rid of them.
Really?
I think they absorbed them completely and there's no more Hudson.
Well, that's fine, but maybe Konami put out a fucking Bomberman or something. They can't be too...
Konami sucks. I would not want Platinum to be a second party dev for Nintendo, though.
No.
I think that'll limit to what they're able to work on.
Yeah.
And, I think stuff like Metal Gear Rising, stuff's cool like that. So they should be free. They should be free.
I'd be cool with it if they could still develop stuff in that vein.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't think they'll be able to work out with outside licenses from other companies like that, unless it was exclusively for...
That's the only outside license they've ever done.
It is.
Yeah, it's like it's in that style, not necessarily licensed.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I like their games to be enjoyed by as many people as possible, so...
The Next Level Games, fuck them. We'll lock them down.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, they're only making Nintendo. Next Level Games only makes Nintendo stuff anyway, and then, you know, license their crap, you know, like Captain America.
Right, so basically what you're saying, anything good that they make is exclusive to Nintendo.
Yeah, it's already on Nintendo stuff anyway, so.
All right.
I would say probably Way Forward would be my pick. I mean, a lot of their games tend to fit with Nintendo's sensibilities and their audience. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people tend to think that WayForward stuff is maybe not quite as good as it could be. And I feel like being a part of Nintendo would probably help them get that extra level of polish.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, like, you know, as much as people praise WayForward, I think they're kind of hit or miss. They can be hit or miss even within one game, you know. But I think with something like Nintendo's discipline, Nintendo breathing down their necks, they could really wrangle in some of the stuff that I feel they do not so well.
Yeah, I really like WayForward, but I mean, there are definitely some issues with some of their games, and I feel like Nintendo would definitely help them iron that stuff out.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I'm a huge WayForward supporter.
I don't know if I'd necessarily want them to be second party, but I would like to see them work on a Nintendo IP, because they knocked the shit out of the park with Contra 4, and it looks like they, like, poured their fucking heart into making that game as classic Contra as possible, and I want to see them pour that same devotion into a Nintendo game.
Actually, you know what? This just hit me. Who was the developer, fuck, that did Henry Hatsworth and Monster Tale?
What is their name?
Yes, Dream Rift, yep. I want them. Snap them up. Because they ain't done a whole lot, but they're really creative and they make some fun stuff. I mean, Monster Tale is like one of my favorite games on the DS.
Game
is terrific.
Henry Hatsworth is one of my favorite on the DS.
Yeah,
there
you go.
They're fantastic when they're on their game.
Didn't they do that Mickey game you hate?
They did.
That's why I said when they're on their game. They can be great.
All right.
Yeah, I forgot about that. But you can tell, you can tell their heart was in the right place for that, but unfortunately, that was pretty hampered, yeah. All right. Nathan says, "Hey guys, just want to say that I don't listen to your podcast in the tub, but I am normally nude while listening, so take that as you will." Fuck, dude, I ain't wearing nothing but pajama pants right now, so you take that as you will.
I'm out of pajama pants. We'll just leave it at that.
That is actually more than I normally wear. what are your thoughts on the recent successes of games on Kickstarter, and do you feel that seeing how passionate the fans are for some of these games will cause other developers to rethink their strategies for how to go about financing and developing their games in the future? Do you expect to see bigger developers try their hand at this? It seemingly removes all the financial risk and would really allow some devs to try some truly creative things, which really excites me. Anyway, you guys rule. Keep up the awesome. I love Kickstarter. I think it's a fantastic idea. There's a little bit of saturation right now, right? Like, where there's, like, every other story on a gaming blog is another Kickstarter thing. But I love the concept. I love the concept that, like, people who have the drive and perhaps the talent, but not the monetary means, can put out a game and people can go, like, I'll get involved with this. And you give, like, a really small contribution and you get the game. Or maybe some extras in return to paying sort of upfront for that. It's a little bit of a risk. But the truth is there haven't been that many high-profile Kickstarter failures. You know, it's a pretty, as far as risk goes, it's a pretty safe one. So, I love it. I think it's great.
The biggest Kickstarter failure I could think of was that, like, sword fighting game that some dude was making. And it actually got funded for a lot of money, and then apparently he said that they ran out of money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's that. There's a bunch of stuff. There's that Code Hero one. Was that through Kickstarter, I think?
I don't know.
There's Double Fine. Now, this isn't necessarily a failure, but you have Double Fine who asked for X dollars, got X times and fucking gajillion, and then, like, oops, ran out of money, we need more. Double Fine, what the fuck you doing? What are you doing, Double Fine? That's a little messed up. Maybe you should have reined in your budget a little bit there, guys.
I think Double Fine's probably the biggest developer that's been on there as well, that I can think of anyway.
Yeah, yep.
So when Nathan says bigger developers, like, are we talking about, who are we talking about? Are we talking about, like, developers that are 100% owned by a publisher as well or something like that? That'd be bullshit.
I mean, well, I don't know how bullshit it is. It depends on how you look at it, because there are some things that, even for bigger publishers or developers, it's still a creative risk for them to put out. And if they can offset some of that, the monetary risk, to someone, I mean, really, you're basically upfronting the cost of the game and you get the game. You know, as long as the game gets made, there's not really much of a, you're not really deferring much to the person. You're basically, in the end, you're paying for the game. That's it. That's all you're not paying more.
Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, Activision wants help on the next Call of Duty, they can go fuck themselves. But it's, if a major, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but we all know that there are some properties from, you know, major publishers or developers that are financially risky. they can offset that cost a little bit. I'm not upset by that.
I started daydreaming about a physical release for Ace Attorney 5 on Kickstarter, so.
Yeah, I think it was Chris Kohler had mentioned that as a possibility that they should, you know, kickstart a physical release, and I would love to see something like that.
I wouldn't be against that. I would actually be in favor of that. I mean, people get what they want, and, you know, the risk is offset, and that's why everybody wins.
In that case, the game's done. Like, you're basically just paying for the manufacturing costs.
Yeah.
Should set them out.
And as long as you're only paying, like, the $30 or $40 that it costs, as long as they're not asking, give us $60, we'll give you the physical copy of the game. I mean, that's really what it takes. I mean, then the people want the physical copy, and then you're paying a premium. But I don't really like that idea. I can see the argument that, like, you're getting a premium thing. Maybe you got to pay a premium price. But ideally, as long as you're really just paying for the cost of the game, and they're not really taking you for a ride, I don't care. I think that's fine.
I'd pay more for, like, a Phoenix Wright statue that came with it or something.
Yeah.
I think Japan does something like that.
I think they did get a Phoenix Wright statue.
Something cheap and easy to produce, but seemingly it costs them like a few cents to make, but they can jack up the price by like $10 or $20 because it perceivingly adds value. I could be down for that.
I'll be a sucker. Okay, work.
No, that sort of stuff I don't mind.
All right, so if anybody tried to kickstart a high-profile game that we already know sells a bunch or something, or will sell a bunch, they were angry, but if it's some sort of creative endeavor that they're taking a risk on, then we're okay with them kickstarting it.
Right, it's just a matter of offsetting the risk. I mean, there's no risk in putting out Call of Duty. It's going to sell a gajillion copies.
I bet your Activision does something now.
Yeah, they're called season
passes. Like, seeing like Inafune and like other somewhat larger people do it, I'm sure some larger publisher like that will try their hand at it with something.
You think it's just a matter of time?
Yeah.
I'm just picturing Bobby Kotick sitting on a throne made of like stacks of $1,000 bills going, "We need money for this new game."
But I mean, think about it. There are just so many things that I would contribute to as a Kickstarter to get made if the option were there. I mean, there's a ton of things. So,
all right. Like, if EA threw up a Road Rash Kickstarter, I might back it.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. There's a good example of a major publisher or developer asking for money for, you know, property. Who the fuck's going to buy Road Rash? Nobody. No one's going to buy Road Rash. Man, Road
also,
Rash on the 3DS.
Yeah, if EA threw up a new Shaq Fu, I'd back that too.
Dude, Shaq needs money. He's doing all kinds of weird ass commercials for like body wash and shit. Dude's hard up, so.
Yeah, he's been doing a gold bond or something.
Motherfucker's out of money.
Dude's huge. He probably goes through like shampoo real quick and he's like a big commercial deal so they can send
him real
quick.
He's bald.
Yeah, isn't he bald?
I meant body wash, but whatever.
Oh man, yeah, no, dude needs money. He'll be paid in Big Macs. He'll be happy. It's all good. But Road Rash, imagine a Road Rash on 3DS, like zipping down in 3D. I was playing Road Rash 64 the other day. You played Road Rash 64?
I don't know. I played one on PlayStation, I think.
Yeah, no, 64 one's completely unique. I think it was the last console one to be released, and it's ugly as fuck. It's the ugliest fucking game of all time. And people are wearing, like, bright, garish clothes. I'm like, these are supposed to be, like, racing punks. And this guy's wearing, like, orange. I don't understand. And the physics are... They're bizarre, man. But it has one of the best moves of all time. You can take a nightstick or a baseball bat or something like that and jam it into someone's spokes and send them flying, like, over the handlebars. They just soar over the handlebars of their bike. And because the physics are fucked up, you can send them flying, like, miles away from the road. And it turns out the game renders all the fucking countryside out from the road. I don't know why it does that, but me and my brother and my sister would have contests seeing how far we can send each other. And then you're stuck without your bike and you're, like, this little dude walking around the fucking hills and shit far away from the road. And I don't know why the system renders all that, but it does. I would totally play that again.
Might have to look at Road Rash 64 now.
Yeah, I've never played a Road Rash, and I totally can buy this.
It's four players.
I think I played that once, like, years ago at a friend's house, and now I want to play it again.
It's stupid ugly, and the physics are fucked up, but it is so much fun to play.
Usually games with fucked up physics make it more fun to play.
Oh, yeah.
Like Vigilante 8 or something.
Right, right. No, that's exactly what it's like.
Even Tony Hawk.
What do you mean I can't soar like 30 feet in the air? Helsinki Rocks says, hey all, this comment is mostly directed towards Chris, but everyone can chime in. My friend bought Chris's other Wii U and does something unusual that I would like to share with you. He brings the Wii U and a power converter and plays the Wii U in his car during his lunch break. It's pretty crazy, and surprisingly, it works pretty well. I'm actually going to be starting there soon, and we're going to have Wii U gaming sessions during our lunch break. I'm actually making him tune into this episode to hear your responses. I read Twitter, and people do this on planes that have power outlets.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Like, Jeremy Parrish was like, oh god, I hope my flight to Japan has a power outlet. It's like, he can play his Wii U. It's nuts. And of course, they're playing it on the tablet. They're playing, you know, off-screen play on the game.
What, you mean they're not lugging a giant 50-inch TV on a plane with
them? No! Weird! That would be cool if you could plug stuff. Like, I mean, I've never been on a plane that has a screen in the headrest in front of you. Maybe I will this time. That'd be pretty cool. But that'd be cool if like, it had, like, inputs and you can just, like, pop in. I don't know. What would you would pop in, like, your own DVD player? I don't know. Something. That'd be kind of cool, though.
Like, every international flight I've been on has your own personal screen. Have you never had that? Going to Japan, Craig.
Yeah, no, I know. Like, 14 hours, and I'm watching, like, crappy episodes of Big Bang Theory, like, between people's heads on this projected screen 20 feet away from me. It's garbage.
See, when I went to Ireland, I had, like, a Muppet Show marathon because I had my own little TV and had a bunch of episodes like Fraggle Rock and shit on there. And
you could choose
like,
what you watch?
That's awesome. Yeah, it's on, yeah, there's like a list of shows and just and movies, too.
God, this is fucking
dude,
garbage.
That's
no.
Awesome.
No,
yeah,
I've never had
I went to, where did I go? I think I went to London, like, 5 years ago or something, and I had, it had 150 channels to choose from.
This is garbage. How many times have I been to Japan? I've never had
I've
this?
I've never heard this before. That's awesome.
Japan flights would have to be on that high-tech cutting-edge shit, but apparently
dude,
not.
No, dude, it's like a fucking cattle car from the 50s. I don't know.
There's, like, people hanging off the outside.
Got people, like, strapped to the wings.
Yep.
Lay low! We don't want to fuck up the wind!
Nah, you need that personal TV.
Look out for birds.
No, dude, I'm just taking some Tylenol PM and fucking zonking out this time. I don't want to be conscious for this. Connor says, hey guys, first time writing in, but I have been listening since episode 1. This guy stuck with us. First, I want to thank Seth for the copy of Dragon Quest VI that I revived a long time ago, but never wrote in. Thank
That's
you.
Supposed to be received?
Maybe it's received. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I try not to embarrass people by correcting their grammar and spelling on the air, but I didn't know what that
would
have been.
You should do it right at the beginning. Never mind, just go.
Anyway, I have a somewhat strange question that I'm hoping you guys can help me out with. A little bit of backstory first. I work at a recycling depot where all kinds of electronics come through, including new and worst of all old video game equipment to be shredded. One popular one is Xbox 360s. I see at least 10 a week come through to be destroyed. You won't believe how many of them still work. And I, being the klepto I am, have accumulated at least 150 Xbox buttons. The one to power on the system. I have been collecting them.
So just the power button?
I have been collecting them for a few months, and I want your opinion on what to do with them all. Thanks for reading. I love the podcast. Makes days of destroying Vectrexes and Vic-20s all day.
That sounds sad.
Yeah, that's depressing.
Yeah, I would quit after seeing that.
I don't know. Power buttons? Like, when he said Xbox buttons, I'm sitting here thinking, like, maybe, like, the controller buttons. And then, like, if he had the controller buttons, like, make a mosaic or something out of them. That'd be rad. But the power buttons? That sounds really boring. I don't know what the fuck you could do with those.
Belt buckles. Belt buckles and sell them online.
Make something that, put a couple of LEDs in there. Make them emulate the Red Ring of Death.
That'd be awesome.
I'd buy that.
Red Ring of Death belt. Yeah, I thought of something like really macabre with that, and just somebody like hanging themselves with the Red Ring of Death. Never mind, let's go.
Matt says, what do you guys think of the art style for Super Smash Bros. 3DS? For some reason, I love the way it looks. I like it too. I like those bold outlines on the characters.
Yeah, I actually really like it.
Yeah, it looks really cool. That cel shaded look.
I think the look of the 3DS version is kind of cooler than the Wii U version.
Yep.
I'm glad they made it look a little different, you know, not
Me
just,
too.
You know, lower resolution version of the Wii U game or something.
Right. But apparently you can turn that off. I don't know why you would want to, but...
The outline thing?
Yeah, you can turn, yeah. Apparently that's an option you can turn off.
Yeah, I think it has, like, different thicknesses, isn't
that? Is that what it is? Oh, okay, yeah. Sakurai, I read at least that you can turn it off, but yeah, Sakurai talked about that. Matt says, what Metroid game is your favorite? I would honestly have to say that mine is Other M. I like Other M. It's a super flawed game in, like, a lot of ways, but...
Right? Yeah, I wouldn't say it's my favorite. It's definitely better Metroid games, but it was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has issues, but I really liked it.
I would say Metroid Prime, though. My favorite is Metroid Prime.
That might be mine as well. That's like the real... That's the first Metroid game I really, like, sat down with.
No, I played a little bit of 1. I mean, not really enough to really do a whole lot with, but I mean, I played a little bit of 1, quite a bit of 2, and some of Super Metroid. I think I finished 2, actually. And then a little bit of Super Metroid as well, but Metroid Prime was the first one that, like, I bought, probably at launch, and just kind of sat down and actually played it myself, yeah.
I did not have a car when that game came out. I walked, like, 3 miles down a hill and then, you know, back up a hill to a Best Buy to go pick up my pre-order of that game.
So was it 3 miles total or 6 miles round trip?
Like 6 miles round trip.
Oh, man, that's some dedication.
That's worth it, though. That is an
uphill both ways.
No, the hill was huge. It's a big-ass hill. It's a street called Texas Street in the North Park area of San Diego that goes down to Mission Valley. It's a big hill. But yeah, no, so I was like ready to start camping at like halfway up the hill and just finish the rest of the hike the next morning.
Set up camp till the next day.
Yep. But yeah, I like Metroid Prime the most. I think it's a really goddamn good game.
It is a good game.
Yeah, Prime was actually my first experience with Metroid at all. I hadn't even heard of it before that. So I loved Prime, and I didn't go back and play the first 3, I guess, 1, 2, and Super until like this year.
I'm surprised because the first one is like right on the disc for Prime, right?
Don't you have to
link with Fusion or something?
Yeah, Fusion.
Oh yeah, and I didn't have any of the Game Boy ones.
All right.
Yeah, I didn't get into the series until the same time as you guys with Prime and Fusion, which I think came out on the same day. But my favorite is Super, and that's actually one of my favorite games of all time. So I think that game is fantastic. Somehow I didn't play it until like a decade after it came out, but it just struck a chord with me. It's awesome.
Chris, were you like trying to figure out how to get across that bridge that crumbles underneath you because you didn't know there's a run button in a really stupid place?
That is really fucking stupid. I will admit that. Fucking run button. Even now, sometimes I play that game and I forget the run button is there. Like, goddamn. Yeah.
Like, you really don't need it till like way later on anyways when you start doing the whole shine jump things or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is really stupid, but I still love the game.
Yeah, no, that's a good game. Most of them are good.
Yeah. Prime is really fantastic, too, though. That's probably my favorite GameCube game. And also one of my favorite of all time, but I do prefer Super.
Crack open my Metroid Prime trilogy. Mine's still sealed.
Yeah, good for you, Crash.
I got it for $20 at Target, and I kept it sealed.
I saw that for $20 at Target, and I almost bought it, but I already owned it, so...
Foolish mortal.
I didn't. Well, I'm never going to sell it anyway, so... Whatever.
Yeah, no, I'm not selling. It's just fun. It's just bragging rights, because I'm not selling it either.
I have a stupid copy of a trilogy, because I bought it from GameStop used.
You didn't have the slipcover, did you?
Yeah, it doesn't have the slipcover, and I paid like $75 for it.
That fucking sucks.
Yeah.
I guess if you just want to play the games... Because really, I mean, honestly, like, if we're speaking about this objectively, $75 for those 3 games, I ain't gonna complain.
That's a good deal.
I mean, I got all 3 of them plus the trilogy. I mean, I paid for all of them, so I mean, I ain't gonna complain about that. But like, when you sort of like look at it more, when you expect it a little more closely, like, oh, I got this used copy of a slipcase for $75.
Yeah, that's the part that pisses me off.
Right? Yeah, like $25 over MSRP. No, nope.
But at least I got it back. I got it back a while ago, not before they started doing this reprint. So it's in a steelbook. It just doesn't have the slipcover.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the ones now don't even have the steelbook or something.
Yeah, they're in a regular white.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Am I alone in thinking that Metroid Prime 3 is the weakest in the trilogy?
No, I mean, I don't know what others think, but I think that 3 is, I like it after 1. 2 I don't really care for all that much, actually.
I would rank them 1, 2, 3
yeah.
as best worth.
No, I don't like the concept of playing a game, because, I mean, to be fair, Metroid Prime 2 is not the only game that does this, but there aren't that many. It's just the idea that a game that... penalizes you for just simply existing. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know,
that is frustrating, yeah.
And you have to run to, like, different, you know, safety areas. I don't like that. That feels, I don't like feeling like the flames at my back. Especially in a game where, like, that's based on exploration and has these beautiful graphics. Like, I don't want to, like, well, gotta fucking run. Fuck all this shit. Nah, that's, I don't want to do that.
I hated that the first time I played, but I didn't mind it the second. And I think it makes the reward for getting the light suit at the end feel like more of a payoff, since you're just like, fuck you, Dark World everywhere, and then you can just go over the hell you want.
Yeah, I guess if you're playing it a second time, like, you're already a little more familiar with the game. I can see that. But I never played it a second. I never finished it a second time. I just did it the one time, and I was pretty frustrated with that.
Also, to be fair, Craig, I'm sure that there are people who say that Majora's Mask sucks because it has a time limit, so...
Yeah, I guess. I don't think it's really the same thing, but...
No, it's not the same thing, but I mean, I'm
feel like people who, like, complain about Majora's Mask time limit don't understand it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It drives me crazy.
Because not only can you slow it down dramatically, like, it really doesn't hinder you a whole lot.
Like, you could do whatever you need to do and then get the permanent item that you get and then you reset the time and it's fine.
And then what's the
difference?
You lost
a bunch of progress, you still... did everything that you did.
Right, exactly.
If anything, that's to, like, the sense of dread and tension in the game, I think, but...
I think so, too, and I know, I think that's a case... I mean, that's a good example of a similar sort of idea, but implemented in a way that is not as punishing towards the player. It adds, like you said, to the dread, to the tension, but without feeling like you're being punished.
It creates the feeling that the game is trying to portray anyway.
Yeah.
But the Metroid Prime 2, I think, also easily has the best bosses in the series.
I really don't.
It does have some really cool bosses.
I don't remember the bosses.
There's like Quadraxes.
God, yeah, okay, yeah, yep, yeah, I do remember. Yeah,
and
okay.
The giant and the moth thing. I don't know.
I remember weird things from that game. That was a
such
really.
As...
I remember, like, humans being in the game. I'm like, wow, this is really fucking assholes doing here. Like, why aren't you doing anything?
I remember dead humans. I don't remember any live humans.
Were they? I don't remember. I remember just the fact that humans were there at all was just kind of strange.
Yeah, there's a cutscene with them, and then I think they all die.
Yeah.
Just
I think that's what it was. But I just thought, like, whoa, who are these dudes? I'm like, what are they?
Three has humans, too, that you, like,
I mean, there's, like, tons of humans.
There are tons of, yeah. I think two. Well, it was just jarring in two because there was like nobody in one.
Yeah.
And then three, I was used to by that. I mean, it was kind of a bigger deal that they're like alive in three. But two kind of primed for that. I think it's a bigger shock to go from like no humans to some humans to than it is from some humans to like humans you interact with.
Right.
Actually, now that I remember, there's actually possessed humans too. It's like dead corpses that come back to life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, that was a lot of tangents.
It was. I like when the questions allow us to go on tangents, though. Get a little more content in this anemic podcast, right? An hour. Clock Blocker says, if you aren't sure what city you're in, just yell, thank you, Detroit.
I don't know.
Thank you, Detroit.
I think you're in St. Louis, Jeremy.
Oh, right. Sure.
Not sure what that
is. Well, it's moving. I don't know where I am.
I just watched Seth D.F. Gargoyle here. Says, I just watched Seth beating Demon's Crest four times.
Did you really beat it four times?
Yeah.
What the fuck, Seth?
Yeah, I only watched for one.
Step right up to see the world's most boring man stream games four times in a row.
No, there's four endings. Yeah, I got the worst one in like 2 hours because I didn't know. I just like rushed through the game. I had like 1/5 of the overall items, and I was like, "This can't be the end of the game, right?" And then the credits started going. I was like, "What did I do wrong?" So then I got the second ending because I was missing one item. And then in order to get the super true ending, you need to get the good ending anyway. So that was inevitable. So yeah, it was four times.
How long did you stream last night?
Oh, God. You don't want to know. I think I was up to like 2 or 3 in the morning, man.
Jesus.
God damn.
How many people are watching you at that time?
I think I was down to 2 or 3 by that point.
Yeah, I stayed until like 2 my time. But that's like 12 for you.
Yeah, I came in about midnight, which I think is like, what, 10 for you?
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah. The last bosses were really hard. I'll talk about it later. Whatever.
He goes on to say, or to be fair, it could be she. They go on to say, I usually listen to the podcast when I'm preparing food, before going to sleep, or walking to class, and it makes these things more enjoyable. Keep up the great work on the stream and the podcast. We will do our best. Clockwalker says, I finally picked up a 3DS XL, along with that style-savvy game that Craig likes. is Clockwalker's, like, is everything he says, well, it's just, like, inside stuff? Like, this thing, thank you, Detroit, that none of us are apparently in on.
It's a Daffy Duck quote.
Oh. And then we got Style Savvy here, which I like Style Savvy. Has anyone else played Style Savvy?
No, I didn't play Style Savvy.
I didn't buy the game, but I did download the two demos that it had.
That's how we got hooked. I played the damn demo. I'm like, fuck, I'm going to have to buy this fucking game, aren't I?
Yeah, after you suggested it, I downloaded both demos. I played one, and I was like, this is dumb. And then I played the other, and like next thing I knew, it was a demo, and it was 2 hours later. I was like, what the fuck is going on? I never picked up the actual game though.
It is a really good game. I wonder if he actually went out and bought a 3DS and the first game he bought was Style Savvy. Like I really wonder, like Mario Kart, like none of this shit, yo, Style Savvy. And it's a good game. Like I wouldn't, if someone said like that's the first game I got, I wouldn't begrudge that. It just seems like a very off the wall choice. Seth, you should play it.
Nah.
He's like, I'm
mad at fashion, man.
It's that Mexican machismo. I can't play this.
Yes, you know how macho I am. I'm kind of looking my manliness over here, Craig.
I love it. I think
it's basically character customization in the game.
Yeah, that's really what it is. I mean,
but you get judged on it.
Yeah, you don't need a fashion sense. The game trains you. I mean, there's a lot of exposition because it is a Nintendo game. But it teaches you to, like, look for stuff. And then there are, like, brands and sort of, like, themes to clothing. And it trains you to how to pair these up. And it does so really well. It does so in a way that makes sense for, like, game design. You don't really have to think, like, fashion in real life. It's almost like a puzzle game in some ways. And it's training you to look at these things in a kind of puzzly kind of way. And it does so really, really well. It uses a lot.
If I hated changing clothes and shit in God, what's that stupid game you like? The World Ends With You. Would I?
I don't think that's at all the same thing. That's not how it works. I mean, like for instance, early on, like you're working in a shop, is what it is, and so people come in and go, like, I want something. Oh God, I forgot the kinds of themes that they have now. But they'll say they want like a particular kind of theme, and you'll be trained.
They want
by
a tiara penis thing.
They want a tiara penis. and you'll be trained to like, oh, okay, well, they want this kind of theme. Like, these are the brands that go with that. So then you start sorting by brands, and then they'll tell you if they want a top. So it's like, it's kind of like piecing together the brands, the themes, and the articles of clothing that you have at your disposal.
All right, let's run through a mock. You be the shop owner, and I'll be the customer.
Oh, it's been a while since I played it.
Hi, I'm a princess, but I also like penises. Do you have anything for me?
Fuck off. Check out the I don't know if the demo's still up there, but you should check out the demo. It was fun.
I probably downloaded them. I, like, compulsively downloaded every demo because I have a 32-gig card in my 3DS.
If I remember correctly, one of the demos is, like, massive. Like 2 gigs or something.
I didn't play the demos on my own 3DS. I wasn't even going to, like, I don't want that on there.
But you bought the game.
I bought the game, exactly.
Don't corrupt your download history.
That's the joke. Yeah, no, now it's just in my activity log. I purge it. I delete it every single time I play. Nope. I love Style Savvy. I don't care. Who knows? Clock Blockers also says, hashtag blue balls. Seth will know what I mean. This is all, it's all pure inside stuff. That's all this guy wants to wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
You gotta be there for that Demon's Crest stream. Then you know.
I was at a fire last night. No, I pop it on your stream sometimes when I have the time.
You were at a fire?
Yeah, like a bonfire. Like a stand around and drink and talk about women's.
I was thinking about like arson or something.
Yeah, no, I know what you're thinking about.
You lit this apartment on fire.
Yeah. I like it here. I lit the stump next on fire. That's it. That's it. It's everything for the mailbag. So if you want to join in again,
so,
if you're listening.
That was episode 129. Thanks, everybody.
It's 128 again, and it's fucking back to
the future. Nice try, Seth.
Get the fuck out of the DeLorean. that's the mailbag. TeamUS.net. Shoot us something. Even if you've never had before, it's fun. Now let's talk about some games we've been playing. Jeremy's our guest. Jeremy, if you want to go first.
Sure. I haven't been playing that much recently. Mostly what I've been playing is Wonderful 101. And
how far are you into this game?
I just finished Operation 6, I think.
All right, so you're way further than me.
I'm pretty close to the end. Okay. I think I looked it up. I think there's 9 operations total. And each one is basically 2 missions and then a boss. But it's all basically just a boss.
Right?
Yeah. the game is super fun, though. I can't put it down while I'm playing. But then I get super frustrated with it and have to put it down. It's really fun, but really fucking hard.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I mean, I am loving it, but you really need to know what you're doing. You really need to know all the different abilities and the mechanic stuff, or else you're going to have a lot of trouble.
Yeah,
and you probably will
have
trouble anyway.
I don't know, but I think at the point I'm at, I finally have like every ability besides the ones you can buy. But like all the unlockable abilities I have, and I'm finally starting to get used to them. But like, I don't know if I just suck at this game or whatever, but like, it's hard.
Have you looked up combo videos on YouTube?
No, I haven't actually.
Because there's some crazy shit you could do in that game that like I would not have realized otherwise. Like switching weapons like mid attack and charging up the next move for the next weapon while you're switching weapons and stuff like that. And you could like flow through all these different things and then like ground pound somebody at the top of your launch. It's crazy stuff. You should look up some combo videos.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to look that up. I've gotten pretty good with the combos. Like, pretty consistently when I finish... each mission is made up of, like, little missions that are basically just the different segments of the level. And after each one, you get a ranking. And, like, almost consistently, I get a bronze on time and damage and a platinum on combos. So... I'm doing
the damage is definitely the hardest to get the full.
Yeah, the one thing that absolutely frustrates me with the game is that no matter who you're fighting, when you attack them, there's almost no indication that you're doing damage to them. It doesn't interrupt their attacks or anything else. Mm-hmm. But anytime you get hit, your guys fly everywhere, and you have to then run around and pick them all up.
Mm-hmm. Pain in the ass too.
Yeah, yeah. Have you guys fought Prince Borkin at all yet?
I've only been through the first 2 operations, so
I'm still in the second operation. So
okay, he's like the main villain, but you fight him multiple times throughout the game. I've already fought him like 4 times, and you're basically fighting yourself. Like he's another team of guys that can do all the same morphs that you can.
Ooh.
But all of his morphs can't be interrupted, but if he hits you, again, your guys fly everywhere. And I've literally gotten pissed off and almost thrown my game pad. Those fights.
Yeah, I don't know if I need to be buying this game. That sounds really frustrating.
but only those fights with him are getting me that frustrated. Everything else has been... There's parts that are annoying, and then parts that are so fun that, like, I just want to do it over and over again.
There's a lot of Kamiya games have those just annoying-ass bosses. Like, I'm remembering Prince Leo from Beautiful Joe, and I wanted to throw my controller into my TV during that shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
But no, I thought it was fun from what little I played.
Yeah. Well, there's also, like, Seth, I remember last week you said that it was... It's basically like boss rush the game.
Yeah.
In a lot of the later levels, it's becoming much more puzzle based. So like the level I just did, I didn't even realize where one mission was stopping and becoming the next one. And it was just puzzles based on going into areas where you have to go on like the gamepad other than the TV, and using the different powers in conjunction with each other to solve puzzles just to move on to the next area.
That's interesting.
So it's becoming a lot more puzzle based, which I am enjoying because I love puzzle games. The one thing though is I've been trying to. I keep trying to play it while, like, watching something on TV. So I'm trying to play only on the gamepad, and this game is not made to do that.
I was doing that this morning. I watched the series finale of Dexter this morning, which I'm not going to get into that. It was terrible. But I was trying to play Wonderful 101 while I watched it, which was not a good idea.
Yeah. The game, one, it requires all your attention. And two, it's just between... It has a really cool feature where you can switch the screens between the TV and the gamepad, and you can even lay them over each other, so you can have it all on one screen, but then you can't see the whole screen, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And just when you're passing between areas, it doesn't take any of that into account. So then you have to keep switching all the screens around, and it's way too fucking frustrating.
Yeah, it's definitely that demands all of your attention.
So you're saying, like, in the when you're playing on both the TV and the gamepad, obviously, in your hand, like, the areas where you walk into the warehouse and, like, all of a sudden you have to look down at the gamepad.
Yeah.
There's, like, a button where it switches between the two different views, but they're both on the gamepad.
Well, yeah, at any point during the game, you can press the minus button, and it cycles through, I think, like, four different settings of what's displayed on each screen. And there's, like, the main is on the TV and the sub is on the gamepad. Then you can swap those. Then you can have, like, both on the TV but laid over each other. And then the opposite on the gamepad.
I see.
Yeah, so you can mix it around to what fits what you want to do. But it's... If you're trying to play on just the gamepad, it's not going to work, basically. Because, because when you go from... Like, if you walk into the warehouse, it goes to the other screen, but if you don't have that set up visible for where you are, then you have to switch the screens around before you can even see yourself.
That's stupid.
Alright. So that part's annoying, but if you play it with, like, the regular, like, TV and gamepad setup, then I think it's fine, because then you just look down and you go into that area.
Yeah,
other than that, though, those are my complaints with the game. But other than that, it is really fun, and I am enjoying it. Even though that may not have come off like that.
No, it's a fun game.
No,
it's a fun game.
I feel like anybody who has played the game will totally, you know, get your praise coming through. But it definitely can be, you know, frustrating or you know. It's definitely really fun, though. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really fun, and some of the later powers that you get really open up a lot of different combos and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I don't have a lot of combo ability right now. There's not a lot of, like, I don't even have an air launcher yet or anything. I know it's there. I know there's an air launcher move because I've seen it, but I don't even have that yet.
Yeah, well, you can also there's like all like the main. Like, all the main characters that you get, they're all different colors that have their main abilities. There's, like, a sword, a fist, a gun, a whip, claws, a time bomb. Like, all those are really cool, but then you can also buy different abilities in the store. Like, you can get, like a ground pound and a dodge and a shield and stuff like that. And there's actually, overall, there's a lot of powers in the game.
I did play the challenge mode. Challenge mode, like, all the color powers are available to you right from the start.
Oh, are they? I haven't touched
them
all yet.
Yeah, I did that so I could play some multiplayer, which is confusing as shit, because when, like, your characters get knocked around, you don't know whose is who, so you're, like, running over people with Dizzy Stars over them, and they're not rejoining your group, and like, oh, those ones aren't mine, I guess.
Right.
So...
Actually, I'm finding that a lot even in the single player. Like, I don't know where my characters have gone.
Yeah, luckily, they do eventually come to you on their own, but it takes longer than if you were just running over them by yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So that's been the focus of what I've been playing. I'm trying to get that game done. Other than that, I also, Amazon had a sale earlier this week, a gold box sale, and so I bought the Saints Row 4, what is it, Game of the Generation edition?
Yes.
there was a gold box sale on that? I would have bought that.
Yeah, it was, I got it for 90. It's, first of all, that collection is fucking awesome. Like, the case alone, the display case, I would have paid 90 just for that.
So fucking awesome.
It's so cool. I keep just, like turning it on. I have it set up on my shelf now, because I have space on it. So I just put it there, and I'll just, like, turn it on and look at it and crack up.
What number did you get?
What?
What number did you get?
Like, something low, actually. Like 200-something.
What? Fuck you. I pre-ordered it. It's like mine's 1,000-something.
Just ship them out in whatever order.
Right, yeah, no, I think mine's like 1024 or something like that. I mean...
Oh, wow. Yeah, hang on. Let me check. It's, Yeah, I got 290.
I'm dropped. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, Jeremy. And,
wait. Did you both get it on the same system?
Mine's PS3.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, well then I got nothing.
Yeah, that's really weird, actually. I was surprised to get that low, though.
Dang, that's bullshit. I got
to they're, like, shipping them out in reverse order. They buried, like, number one. So
I always get screwed with stuff like this. Like, I put it as soon as it went up, I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want that. And all I did was talk about Saints Row for, like, a week. And then there was that, the soundtrack to Sword and Sorcery, the record, right? The vinyl. I didn't get mine for, like, 3 weeks after everyone else got theirs. I bought mine, like, the day it went up. Chris was like, I got mine. Fuck you, asshole. You didn't even know it existed until I told you. Always happens to me. Always does.
I'm not going to I usually get dicked on stuff like that.
Well, well, I'm glad one of us got a lower number. Yeah, I'm glad one of us got a lower number then. So what do you think of the game?
But yeah. So I popped the game in the other night, and... That game is fucking ridiculous. I haven't played... I missed out on Saints Row 3, which is a massive mistake. but I had like, fucked around with Saints Row 2 a while ago. But I don't think I played through the story of it. I just like, went in, like, fucked around. And...
Chaos in the City.
That's mostly exactly what I did with the second one, too. I mean, I played some of the story, but it wasn't until 3 and 4 where I got more invested with the story mode.
Right. Yeah, I, well, it was funny, actually, because I think, like, a month or two ago, I don't remember where it was, but I saw Saints Row 3 on sale somewhere, and I was like, hang on, let me just check something really quick. I didn't even realize that I owned the game. I completely forgot. I don't remember when or where I bought it, but I do have a physical copy of Saints Row 3. Totally forgot that. Never played it. And I need to go back to that at some point.
I think it'd be hard to go back now that you can't, like, run up buildings and glide.
Well, that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there's definitely a progression. Like, it seems like a gimmick. I mean, technically it is, by definition, where it is a gimmick that you can run really fast and jump really high and stuff. But
right.
I don't know. I think it adds things that are a little more meaningful to the game. Makes traversal just more fun, more engaging.
Oh, absolutely. It's like the, it's like an Infamous when you can, like, I think you can, like, launch yourself off buildings and stuff.
Yeah, it takes like 30 hours to get there in, like, Infamous, but they get to, like, right away. Like, pretty much, like, the first powers you get is running really fast and jumping really high.
Yeah, that's I think that was the last thing I did. The last thing I did was upgrading those abilities.
Yeah, it's like immediately, like, here's the keys to the kingdom, go have fun.
Yeah, there's those, I forget what they're called, but there's, like, those purple pillars that you get to upgrade the abilities.
Yeah, they're like the orbs from Crackdown.
Yeah, exactly. But they're fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
And,
I'll just do that. I was doing that for, like, 2 hours, just jumping from rooftop to rooftop, collecting those. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I do something now.
Yeah, that's what I was doing, because every time I got one, you can see, like, 5 more.
Yep.
And I it got to the point where I forgot what mission I was doing. And then, but yeah, I was just collecting those and upgrading the abilities. And as you get more of them, you can just jump from building to building and get all of them.
Yeah.
Like, super easy. But the game is so much fun. Like, even playing through the missions, there's so much wit in this game. It's awesome. I need to play more of it. I've only played, like, 2 hours or something.
Yeah, the whole hullabaloo about, like, dildo bats or dubstep guns, as silly as they are, really betrays, like, how smart some of the writing can be. Like, once you start freeing people from the simulation, you get access to these things called loyalty missions with them. And it's, like, one, like each one is, like, these individual specialized missions for that person. And the concept is basically, like, give you, like, backstory on these characters. Because, like, you didn't really play the past game, so these are actually good for you. But it's good for players who haven't played those past games. It gives you a little bit more backstory, a little bit more characterization of these characters. But they're not, like, the typical, like, go here and kill these things or, like, drive in this car and follow this guy. Like, they're scripted and built around the personalities. Like, one character is, like, obsessed with, like, this weird British True Blood kind of TV show. So he writes a program about that show and, like, inserts himself into it. So, like, that's one of the loyalty missions, for instance.
Okay, yeah.
So it's got some really cool concepts like that. So, like, I mean, the game is silly, and I like that it's consistently silly. Like, it never really breaks that, but, like, I think people might be too quick to write off just how smart some of the writing can be because of that silliness. Because some of the writing is actually pretty smart.
Yeah, absolutely. At least from what I've experienced, I think even the voice acting helps that. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I think at least. I started out the game and I figured, what the fuck, it's Saints Row. So I made my character a sexed up girl with, like, purple hair. I was like, whatever, it's Saints Row. But the girl that did the voice is actually really good, and it works with everything. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
It really impressed me. And then, like, what is it? I think, like, the third mission or something. I guess it's the first mission when once you're in the program, whatever it's called. You start, you're in, like, the 50s or something. It just starts, and I don't know if the guy walks the same way, but when you start, the girl's walk cycle is, like...
It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's just, it's, like, so bravado-driven, and just, like, arms, like, flailing all over
It's really place. Cheery and, like, Leave It to Beaver-ish, but it's things like that. Like, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, where, like, that kind of stuff is, you know, really smart, and once you start catching on to what the writers are doing, it's really quite clever.
Yeah, yeah, it is, and yeah, I'm loving all of that so far. I'm definitely gonna be playing more tonight, and yeah,
is that it for you?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I've been playing recently. So,
Chris, what have you been playing?
Well, I played some Wonderful 101, which we talked about a little bit with Jeremy. Other than that, I haven't had a whole lot of time to play games this week, but I have been playing The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker HD. Since I am a sucker and I went out and bought the limited edition console bundle.
And that's a... Well, sold the Wii U anyway. Not
yeah.
Controller.
I sold my old Wii U, or the Wii U with my old gamepad. So I basically synced the new gamepad up with my old system so I could keep all my downloaded stuff.
Yeah, it's...
Since Nintendo does not have a transfer system set up as far as I know. So thank you to Robert for purchasing my Wii U, since Helsinki Rocks wrote in with a comment about that. Wind Waker HD is... What's that, Seth?
That was not me.
I think it's Jeremy.
That was me.
My bad. I'm not used to having a third person to react to. So. My bad. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Just saying, I'm still debating doing the same thing. So,
I'm
happy with my decision. I mean, considering I was able to sell my other Wii U to, you know, subsidize the cost.
Right.
I totally think it was worth it. And I could have gotten more if I had opted to sell the, you know, the download code. But I'm a sucker because I love Wind Waker, so I wanted to play it.
Well, yeah, at this point, I guess I would sell the code with it.
Yeah, at this point, it'd probably be worth it just to sell the code.
Wait,
yeah.
It came with a download? It didn't come pre-installed?
No, it's a code.
You can just sell the code that's red.
Yeah, it comes with a code for Wind Waker, and it comes with a code for a download of Hyrule Historia, which I did get with the system because I have the book. So
also, it's two separate codes for those.
Yep, two separate codes.
Oh, so you can do them individually?
Yep. I installed Wind Waker, but I did not install Hyrule Historia. I gave that away with the system.
That's cool.
Yeah. As for Wind Waker, I mean, obviously I'm a huge fan of this game, so, you know, it's going to come as no surprise that I am enjoying it a lot. The visuals are gorgeous, as you might imagine. You know, Wind Waker is a beautiful game anyway, but, you know, upgrades them to HD, it's fantastic to look at. You know, people have complained about the bloom, and I feel like, you know, when you look up at the sky sometimes, it definitely, you know, it is... You know, as if you're not a fan of that look in screenshots and in videos, you're probably not going to be a fan of it in the game. It does bother me sometimes, but I still think it's really good looking.
Is it not as bad in motion then?
For the most part, I don't think it's too bad. I mean, there are points when, like, you look up at the sky and into the sun, and it does look a little, you know, overwhelming maybe. But overall, I mean, I was never really bothered by it overall. Before I played the game, and I continue to feel the same way. So I feel like whatever opinion you have of it at this point is probably going to carry over when you play the game.
Gotcha.
I feel like there are definitely some changes to the music. You know, I heard some people say that the music had been remastered or something like that. Maybe you won't notice that if you haven't played it, you know, seven times like I have, but some of the music definitely sounds like it's been improved. Which I like, because I think this has some of the best music in the series, if not in all of gaming.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's improved, that's quite impressive, because I Wind Waker is my favorite soundtrack to a game ever.
Yeah, I'm right up there with you. I talked to Sully about this on Twitter, who also bought the bundle, and seems to have played the game a lot, just like I have. He said the same thing, that it seems like either it's maybe orchestrated or at very least very much higher quality sound samples, which is exactly how I felt about it. So I'm really happy they did that, because I think, you know, the melodies are already fantastic, so improving the sound quality is just icing on the cake. I've been playing the game on Hero Mode, which is the harder difficulty that's included with the HD version. Which, at least earlier on, you know, in some of the earlier dungeons, I'm still in the first dungeon, is kind of a bitch, because basically what it does is it cuts your damage, or it doubles the damage you get, so instead of getting a quarter of a heart taken away, you get half of a heart, which isn't that big of a deal, but there are no recovery hearts to find. So,
what?
You know, if you get
not
hit,
at all?
No. Well, so far, I just got to the boss of the first dungeon. And there are fairies before you enter that room, but other than that, there are no hearts that you find, you know, when you defeat enemies or in pots or anything like that.
Wow.
So you have to be really careful. I mean, you know, getting hit by an enemy, you know, it may not take that much damage, but if you only have three hearts throughout the entire dungeon, that can be much more difficult than you might think. And, you know, even if you do something stupid, like accidentally walk off a cliff or something and lose half a heart, that it definitely adds up. So, I mean, in that way, it can be a little more frustrating, because if you do something, you know, stupid that, you know, isn't necessarily indicative of your, you know, how good you are at the game, and, you know, you just make a simple mistake, it can really hurt you. So I was kind of surprised to see that there is a, you know, a fairy in the pots before you enter the boss, but it's probably a good thing that you're there, because I already died a couple times in the first dungeon, so we'll just... After playing the game seven times, I was surprised to have died a couple times already, but that's what happened.
That's your only way of healing, then I guess I have to keep those there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I assume your hearts would refill when you get a heart container or a piece of heart or something like that, but without having any recovery hearts, I mean, I haven't hit any... you know, great fairies who refill your health or anything like that yet. So I literally, the fairies that I found in the first dungeon before the boss is the only time my health has recovered aside from when I died. So.
You'll get potions and stuff later
right.
on that you have, like, bottles. It sounds like it's going to be mostly hard going right at the beginning.
Yeah, I assume as you play further in the game, you're able to get potions and visit... you know, great fairies, and you'll just have more hearts in general. It'll certainly help, but right from the beginning, it's tough going. I mean, even in, you know, what the fuck is it called? The Forsaken Fortress. You know, if you get found and, you know, if you jump off a ledge that's too high or something, you get hurt. And, you know, even if you're not fighting enemies, you can hurt yourself and end up dying if you're not careful. So,
Chris, I challenge you to a 3-heart hero mode run.
Fuck you. I'm not sure I want to try that.
Aw.
I mean, I am really enjoying it, though. You know, as somebody who's played this game so many times, having that extra element of challenge is definitely invigorating. And it's awesome, you know. And it actually did go back up on GameStop, the limited edition, yesterday, so I pre-ordered a copy of that. So now I'll have 2, and I won't have to open up my limited edition.
Can we talk about how this game has easily the best characterization in a Zelda game?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Go ahead.
Because it's really damn good. Like, just like when Link leaves his grandma in the beginning, and he's all, like, waving by all sad and stuff.
It's very expressive.
Yeah.
And I just love Ganondorf in this game. He's, like, almost remorseful, and he has memories of the past, but he's still a dick, you know? He still thinks he's doing whatever's right. But
yeah.
It's easily the best Ganondorf as well. And,
It's really impressive. I mean, I love the animation. I think that's a big part of why, you know, the characters are so expressive, but it definitely isn't just that. You know, Ganondorf is expressive because of the writing as well.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Like you mentioned, though, even Link with the cartoon animation stuff, Link comes across as much more expressive and alive and part of the world.
Absolutely.
Than I think in any other Zelda game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mentioned that, you know, having less hearts, you tend to be a little harder. When you have, like, you know, 1 heart left, you know, his eyes will start to droop and his, you know, his body sags a little bit and, you can tell that he's been hurt. And
yep.
I love that, you know, the animation is just so expressive.
I like his vocalizations more in this game. They seem to fit the body more.
Yeah,
I like when he meows like a cat and you're following them.
Come on! the only thing Link's ever said, come on! Like, ever.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Yep, Link talks.
No, he found a mirror in Zelda 2.
that was introspective dialogue. That was a soliloquy going on or something.
Yeah, but Wind Waker HD, if you're a fan of the game, it's definitely worth picking up.
Comes out on my birthday.
Yes, it does.
Exciting.
There you go. 4th.
Exciting.
Happy birthday, Craig. Happy early birthday.
Hey, thanks.
And some of the little changes they made to, like, the interface and, you know, the mechanics have definitely improved it. I mean, it's still the same game it was, but, like, having the Wind Waker and the sail assigned to their own buttons all the time rather than have to, you know, take up one of the buttons that you need for items and not have to switch all the time is... It really just streamlines things and really helps it. So if any of those little things were bothersome to you, you know, it'll definitely, I think, make you enjoy it a little more. But at the heart of it, it's still the same game. So if you hated the game all along, this probably won't change your mind. But I still love it, if not perhaps a little more, because, you know, streamlining things.
Do you have any... If you hated the game, you have no heart.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely.
Pretty much.
Do you have any equipment that you need to aim in first person? Because I've heard some complaints about how first person aiming works now, but I guess I don't, without having played the game, I guess I don't understand what the complaint is, just that people don't like it.
The only thing I've gotten so far that you use in first person is the grappling hook.
Yeah, that's among them, yeah.
I was a little confused by it at first, because you don't, I feel like in the original game it was still used with the left stick. Whereas now you can still move while you have it, and the right stick is used to like aim the grappling hook.
Oh, does it feel weird? Because that doesn't sound like much of a complaint. That sounds...
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a complaint. I mean, it's
different.
It was a little confusing to me at first. I didn't expect it. But I feel like once you get used to it, it won't be a big deal. And it'll probably be nice to be able to move rather than have to, you know, put it away and move. And, you know, if you need to get closer to the hook or whatever that you need to hook onto... I feel like it'd be nice to be able to move rather than have to put the item away. But at first, I can see it being a little jarring, but I wouldn't call it a complaint at all.
Can you aim by moving the game pad also?
Not that I've seen, but I haven't really tried that. So.
I've heard that you could aim with the, like, motion.
I know that was the case in Ocarina of Time 3D.
Right.
They may have carried that over, but I haven't noticed it.
Okay.
Maybe that's in the options, or maybe I just, you know, because I wasn't looking for it, I didn't notice it. But I'll keep an eye out for that. I'll try it out.
Because I actually like that in Ocarina of Time 3D.
Yeah, I thought it worked really well. I used that quite frequently for, like, aiming the bow and stuff. It worked a lot better than I would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's back, I'm certainly happy to see it, because it worked really well there.
Right on.
But that's it for me.
That's it for you, Seth. What have you been playing?
None of your damn business, Greg.
All right, so I've been playing...
Help me, Seth.
Chris wants to know, well, in that case, since he asked, nice.
Well, yours, Greg.
No, I ran through Snatcher again, which is on Sega CD. The voice acting is actually surprisingly decent for a game of that era. It's not great, but it's not bad. It's not like there's PlayStation 1 games that came out much later that are way, way worse in the voice acting department. Cough, Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Cough. But no, they're surprisingly decent here. The game, there's a lot of ridiculousness in this game that I didn't pick up on. Well, I probably did, but it's been probably like 6 years since I played this game. Like, one of the Snatchers, obviously, they're robots that take over people. They, like, kidnap them, kill them, and then take over their identity. So you think that they're the same person, but they're actually a robot, and their whole goal is to take over Earth or something. I don't know. But one of the things about them is that their skin gets cancer very easily from UV rays. So they mostly come out at night, mostly, in the winter.
Was that a subtle Aliens reference?
That was.
Okay.
And they use sunblock, even in the winter. And the main character, Gillian C., who's a junk, it's basically Blade Runner. If you see Blade Runner, this is a video game. He hunts down these Snatchers. When you're investigating, like, one of his big clues to see if somebody's a Snatcher is if they have, like, sunblock in their bathroom. He's like, all right, Metal Gear's his partner, by the way. He has a little robot partner that's like an R2-D2 named Metal Gear. And he's like, all right, Metal Gear, they got sunblock in here. They're definitely Snatchers. Get your blasters. I'm like, holy shit, dude. They have sunblock in their bathroom. Leave them alone. Automatically mean they're robots? Calm down. But they work, so I shot them in the face. But it's a pretty good game, like, for an adventure game, I think. There's a lot of there's not a lot of hand-holding. You got to figure out a lot of the stuff on your own. There's a lot of puzzles. Unfortunately, it does fall into the trope where you have to, like, do the exact same action several times in some sequences before something different happens, which is stupid. So you got to be like, look at bottle, nothing. Look at bottle, nothing. Look at bottle. Oh, look, I noticed something down here, finally, because I'm a dumbass. So that sucks.
That's really annoying.
Yeah, that sounds really frustrating.
It is annoying. And then Act 3 of the game, the original PC, I can't remember what Japanese PC this game originally came out, only had two acts, which is dumb because it, like, ends at the biggest cliffhanger. But the third act of this game, which is in all subsequent versions of the game, is basically like a two-hour movie in typical Hideo Kojima style. He hasn't changed much.
So it's like Xenogears.
Yeah. It's like movie, two shooting gallery stages. The game's actually light gun compatible, so it's like an adventure game, and then every once in a while you can pull out your Menace for Six, I think is the name of the light gun for the Genesis. Doesn't work on my TV, though. But so you have the option of aiming with the, you know, D-pad. So it's movie, two light gun shooting gallery sections, and then a very, very long movie for the ending. But it's actually kind of cool. There's some neat twists in there. Cryogenic freezing, Russia, all this different crazy stuff going on. And I don't know. I like it. I like the game overall. It's pretty good. It's expensive, though. So
it's a little pricey.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of the things I like, there's tons of voice acting on it, and I think that's because there's no FMVs. Like, every movie and cutscene and everything is done with in-game Genesis graphics, or rather say CD graphics, I guess, which is actually kind of really cool. It gives the game a very unique look. I've seen footage from, like, the PlayStation and Sega Saturn ports of this game, and it looks nowhere near as good. It's all early 3D, and it looks just awful compared to the...
Gross.
Yeah. So that was a fun playthrough. And then I also played Demon's Crest, which is the third game in the Gargoyle's Quest series. The side-scrolling portions of this game are very similar to the first two. You have your flight ability. It's actually unlimited from the beginning in this game. In Gargoyle's Quest 1 and 2, the flight is, like, upgradable, and then you got to wait till the very end of the games until you could fly unlimitedly. But you could got the unlimited flight right from the beginning. You shoot fire out of your mouth or whatever. You cling to walls. And so that's all very similar to the first game. But then the overworld is completely different. Gargoyle's Quest 1 and 2, there's like an overworld that you traverse. You walk around from an overhead perspective. The first one has like random battles or whatever. This one is just a Mode 7 map. And you fly around. There's like nothing to do on the overworld, but you fly to the next area. And there's also, I guess, shops that you can fly down to and stuff. So that's how you get from level to level. But there's a lot of backtracking in this game compared to the other two. Like once you get an ability, there's just tons of hidden areas within the levels. And I mentioned this earlier, but there's multiple endings as well. The first time I played through the game, I just pretty much went straight through the levels and I didn't look for any. I didn't know I was supposed to be looking for any secret areas. So I played straight through the game, and then I got a really bad ending and it only took a couple hours. I was like, where's all these items I'm missing? The second time I played through, I noticed a statue blocking a door on one of the levels. I had to transform into a different type of gargoyle. Firebrand has like different forms in this game. I had to turn into a ground gargoyle, football rush a statue that moved the statue out of the way, which was hiding a door. Went into that door. There was a completely different area with a whole new boss all within the same level. I found a power-up that let me break through walls. Then I was able to go back to a different level, break through walls, find a new area there, which gave me another power-up. And then I was like able to swim. And I was able to do all this stuff that I wasn't able to do the first time I played through because I didn't find that very first secret room. So it's actually kind of cool the way everything's hidden within itself. Like, it looks like a very small game at first, but it's actually the majority of the game's hidden away and you got to look for it. One of the things I really like about this game is how it teaches you the mechanics of the game. When you first get control of Firebrand, like, there's a very, like, one-second cutscene where he walks forward and he headbutts a statue in the background directly behind him. And then that tells you, hey, you can headbutt statues and stuff that's behind you. And then eventually you go along, and there's a platform that's just a little too high for Firebrand to jump to, but he wall clings to just underneath the platform, and that teaches you, hey, Firebrand can wall cling to walls. And I just, it's really good game design to teach you the mechanics.
Whatever happened to shit like that?
I don't know, man.
I get it. We've shifted from, by and large, from two dimensions to three dimensions. Our controllers have a ridiculous amount of buttons. I get it. There's some little bit of exposition is necessary, but we went from teaching things through design to just putting a bunch of fucking text boxes all over the screen.
Yep. And there's none of that here.
It's so inelegant. I mean, you see it in so many cases of game design, too, like cameras. Nobody makes camera systems anymore. They make you fucking do it with the... They don't do anything with the camera. You have to move it yourself.
Yeah.
I hate to call it laziness, because I hate when people use the word lazy. All those lazy developers. But this is kind of lazy design. Like, this is like, I don't know how to make this engaging to teach players, so I'm just going to just bark a bunch of things at them, and they have to do what I say.
Yeah, my theory is present the player with a situation that has one possible outcome to overcome, and that'll teach them how to do it.
Yeah. Go get it.
Yeah, which this game does perfectly. It's like, perfect. The last bosses in this game are fucking stupid hard. Like, stupid hard. Like, I was going through, it's a good challenge, whatever. I got some giant dragon lava boss. He shoots lightning at you, shoots like a Kamehameha beam at you, and then he has these blue balls, hashtag blue balls, that chase you around the screen. Just like hit you, and then there's platforms moving towards him. And you gotta, like, jump on the platforms, but sometimes the platforms block you and push you into him. And then his stupid lightning beam, not his Kamehameha beam, because he has, like, five different beams, his lightning beam can also destroy the platforms, and then there's lava underneath you, so then you dunk down in the lava. It took me, like, 30 damn tries to kill this guy. I was going crazy. And then after that, there's an even harder boss that's just, like, a super secret boss. After you beat that boss and you watch the credits, you get a password, put the password in, a new area opens up on the map. Luckily, that time I was able to stock up on potions. There's potions in this game. There's also, like, magic or something. I was able to stock up on potions that completely refill your health. I had, like, 20 health points, though, something like that, and it still took me all 5 of my ginseng potions to be able to kill him. It was... It's crazy. It's crazy hard at the end.
Damn.
And that's...
So,
that's
so it's tougher than Joe Head Joe, then?
It's definitely tougher than Joe Head Joe. and that's all I've been playing.
I haven't been playing a whole lot. I played a little bit of Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix.
I'm assuming you just watched the 358 over 2 days movie, and that's it. Because that's the best part of the game, right?
No. Actually, did you play 358 Days Over 2?
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't a big fan of that game. I liked a lot about it, but that game got so soggy in the middle. Like, for like 10 hours straight, you were basically doing the same thing over and over again.
I'm pretty sure this is the whole game. I like the game, but the requisite before that I don't think it's that good of a game.
Yeah, I can respect that, because there's so many cool ideas behind it. Like, I like the mission structure. I like equipping, like, the different tiles to, like, customize your character.
Yeah.
But, like, the game starts off, and it seems really promising, and then for the next, like, 10 hours, all you do is, like, this repetitive shit in the same Disney worlds over and over again, and there's no life to them. They're the same boring, small maps.
They're fucking empty.
They're
like
barren.
You walked into Disneyland after it's been abandoned
right,
for, like,
it's just,
like,
a set, yeah. And then in between that, you see a couple of cutscenes of them, like, eating ice cream.
Yeah, that's what I would strive for. Every night I'll play before bed, I would play through until I got to the next cutscene. And to be fair, the cutscenes were really well done.
They were, but, I mean, the game was just so dragged. It had so much promise mechanically, but it was just so dragged out and empty. Plot-wise, the environments, everything was just so empty about that game. It was such a shame.
So I would play through each night, get to a cutscene, save, and then go to sleep for the night. And that's just what I did for, like, a week until I beat the game. Mm. And actually, like, it was a good way to fall asleep every night. I don't think that's
not a positive thing about the game.
It's frustrating when a game like that can be much better than what it is. Like, when you can see, like, the promise, and then you're just like, man, you guys fucked this all up.
Yeah, I feel like they probably didn't have a very big budget or something, or they spent all the budget on the cutscene or something, because... It's a very sparse game. There's not a lot.
Yeah, in about every sense of the word, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I actually played the first game. I played, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours? I streamed it. I quite like the first Kingdom Hearts. Like, there's a lot to like about Kingdom Hearts in general. You know, they have great art. They have a great sense of style, and the music's really awesome. And, you know, maybe they've sort of gotten away from that, from what they originally were, I feel like, anyway. But, I don't know, I still like them. I can't follow the story for shit.
Everyone is for it.
It's crazy when people are like, well, this is why. I'm like, how do you know? You just looked that up on Wikipedia, didn't you? Because there's no way in hell anyone remembers all that shit. But apparently people do. The game is sort of, I mean, it was clumsy even when it came out. But it just feels, there's quite a movie that feels dated. The camera does not, you can set the camera between manual and auto, but there's no, like, both. There's no, like, okay, the game will find the best viewing angle. But if you want to override it with the thumbstick, you can do that. The camera literally does nothing if you don't move it, if you put it on manual. So you have to constantly babysit that. And I feel like it's set to the opposite of what you, so, like, you press, like, left on the thumbstick and kind of swings to the right and vice versa. And then you have to do it the opposite, and they call it inverted. And I'm like, this is inverted. It's the way it's supposed to be. I press left. You're supposed to swing to the left. What are you doing? So I got that down. The jumping is really clumsy, still. And there's, like, and I noticed this during, like, the race with, Riku early on when you're still on Destiny Island. You know, where you have to jump from, like, tree to tree. Sora has, like, first of all, the jump is very floaty. It's imprecise. It's tough. And especially when you're fighting the camera at the same time. But, like, Sora has this moment where, like, he lands and then he kind of crouches and kind of absorbs the impact. And, yeah, I guess if I jumped in real life, that's what would happen. But it really slows you down. It makes it, like, it makes it into, like, a really not a platforming game, even though it wants you to do platforming stuff like that. It really slows down jumping. But, I don't know. Despite it being clumsy and stuff, I still really like it, so...
You didn't let Riku get that star fruit, did you?
He did.
I would have restarted.
I know you would have. I don't really care either way, so it doesn't really bother me. But yeah, no, it's just really clumsy. I'm still adjusting. I'm still fighting the camera, and I'm trying to jump, and it's just like, dang. Like, I mean, this game's not that old, but it feels like we're all.
I feel like the game might be old.
What is it, like 10 years old, something like that?
That's, yeah, it's over a decade.
Yeah, 2002 maybe.
But it was. I felt it was clumsy even then, and I think a lot of people felt that way. But I mean, there wasn't. You know, it's not like now where like the age really shows. But I don't know. I don't know. I still think it's a pretty. I don't know. There's still a lot to like about it.
So. I liked the first one better than the second.
I did too.
I never finished the second one.
I don't know if I did either. I know I finished the first one because I was dating someone. I was with my girlfriend at the time. We played through it together. The second one, though, I've played it, but I don't know if I finished that.
I definitely finished it. I feel like it was too easy combat-wise, and then they introduced, like, all these QTEs into the boss fights and stuff, which I wasn't into.
In the second one?
Yeah, in the second one.
Confession time, I've only played the first Kingdom Hearts, and only, like, half of it. all of them.
I definitely like it better.
Yeah, I do too.
Same here.
What have I finished? I finished the first one. I don't know about the second. I don't think I finished the second one. I finished 358 Days Over 2. I finished Chain of Memories. I've never played Re-Chain of Memories, though. I don't really think
I've played. Yeah, I only played the GBA version.
Yeah. And I finished Birth by Sleep, but I've never played Recoded. I don't even own that. And I actually have not finished Dream Drop Distance yet either. I gotta get back on that.
Recoded just sounds stupid. It's like your digital Sora and a digital representation of the world or something. It sounds ridiculous,
yeah. But that's the series in a nutshell.
Like, yeah, a lot of things in this series sound retarded.
I think it epitomizes the stupidity of
and like Birth by Sleep, you're the fucking Power Rangers? Like, I don't even understand it. None of it makes sense. Because there was that whole, like, I think it was like, what was it, like the super secret ending at the end of 2. Everyone thought it was like alluding to 3 and actually alluded to Birth by Sleep. And
you're like, yeah, there's all these keys stuck in the ground and stuff.
Yeah. And it turns out like you're like this team of Power Rangers with flower morphers or something. I don't know. But actually the pendant that Kyrie was working on Destiny Island at the very beginning of the first Kingdom Hearts. I noticed at this time, I'm pretty sure that's one of the morphers. Or at least it has the appearance of one that they use.
I haven't played Birth by Sleep.
Birth by Sleep is really, really good. Like, people are like, we don't have Kingdom Hearts 3. I'm like, play Birth by Sleep. Like, that's Kingdom Hearts 3. That's so good. Like, the loading is ridiculous. Like, you're going to want to install that to your memory stick. But it's fucking great. I think that's my favorite Kingdom Hearts. I highly recommend that.
Because it's like Power Rangers.
Because it's like Power Rangers, exactly.
And it's portable.
You know what? Dream Drop Distance might be, you know, speaking of portable, Dream Drop Distance might be my second favorite.
I couldn't get into it. I tried and it wasn't working. It wasn't clicking.
I like it, but it's Birth by Sleep. Man, that game is so good. That's definitely, in my opinion, the pinnacle of Kingdom Hearts right there. So I played a little bit of that. I streamed some Buck Bumble, actually. I was testing the capability, the Elgato's retro capabilities. And, you know, I'm still fiddling around with the software and the hardware. But it worked. It worked really well. It worked much better than any other thing I've ever used before to do retro stuff. So I played some Buck Bumble. That game is a pain in the ass to play, man. I'll tell you, it's been a little while since I played it because it's... The aiming is really squirrely because your movement and your aiming is tied to, you know, the one analog stick on the N64. And it can get really squirrely because it has a look spring. So it snaps back to the center. So when you're trying to aim on these stupid flying bugs that are zigzagging everywhere and you're trying to get a bead on them, you're constantly fighting the reticle because the reticle wants to snap back.
Wasn't that Star Fox's?
Not quite like that. I mean, Star Fox, I feel like you have more agency over the screen. Buck Bumble's kind of always in the center.
How's the fog in that game, Craig?
Not awesome, but... I mean, I'm playing N64. Like, I played a lot of N64 growing up, so I expect it, but...
I mean, it's weird because some games are, like, just really, really bad with it, like Turok 2 or something, and then, like, Mario 64 or, like, Shadow Man or something is like fine. There's like no fog. I don't know what's wrong with some of these games.
Yeah, it must have something to do with the engine. I don't know.
The worst game I've ever played in regards to fog was Disney's A Bug's Life, which wasn't even mine.
Dude, I remember like my sister or something like that. The only thing I remember from that game is getting dizzy. That's the only thing I remember. There's like an attack that you do where you spin around or something, and then he says, "Getting dizzy, getting dizzy, getting dizzy." It's all over and over again. That's the only thing I remember from that game.
I just know that you can see about 3 feet in front of you.
It is pretty frustrating stuff. Nah, that game's, you know what? Like, it'd be really cool to play a modernized version of that. It's just, you know, that was released in an era where things like that were still sort of experimental, you know?
Are we talking about Bug's Life or Buck Bumble?
Buck Bumble.
All right. I thought he was talking about Bug's Life.
I'm not trying. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was not a good segue. You're right. No, I, there's nothing I can say to salvage Bug's Life. but not Buck Bumbles. It's pretty neat. I mean, just the concept of being like a bee that's, you know, it's sort of like an arcade style flight shooter like Star Fox. It's a pretty good comparison. Not as good as Star Fox, but, you know, just the concept's pretty cool and you get all these different weapons and stuff, but it can be pretty tricky to fly and aim at the same time. Cause like, it's weird too. Cause like, it's all based on, like, it's almost like you're a race car. Like, A is go, and B is stop while you're flying. So you can hold down A, and he zooms, and as soon as you hit B, stops on a freaking dime. And so to be able to, like, maneuver in, you know, 3D, you know, on all three axes in space is dependent on zooming around and then knowing when to hit B and snap the, you know, the thumbstick around. It can get pretty tricky, actually. Because he can do a loop-de-loop, but like in Star Fox. But he can't do a U-turn like in Star Fox. He can't zoom around and fly the other way. There's no move for that. Which would have been kind of useful, actually. But it's an alright game. But mainly, the only thing I've really been playing is Grand Theft Auto V. And
still, Craig.
Still. There's not much more I can add to what I said last week. I like the game. It's a really flawed game. And I don't mean to harp on that, even though I love talking about Grand Theft Auto V. I'm glad that there's actually a dialogue open with that among, like, other game writers, because it's been traditionally a pretty blocked-off thing. It's been assumed, you know, it's almost like, you know, Grand Theft Autos are, like, phoned in. Oh, new Grand Theft Auto, all right, so let's see here, 9.7, check, done, zoom, flip it out the door. And now there's actually dialogue happening around it, and it's really exciting because it's just this cultural juggernaut, you know, for I don't even want to say just for players. I mean, it's huge. Grand Theft Auto is huge just by the sales alone. Look at how much it's sold. It's crazy. So,
$15 trillion worth of sales.
That's the last count. Yeah, no, I read that somewhere. So it's really cool that people are actually talking about this, and there's nuance to it. And I love when there's nuance to video game discussions. When there's a game like this that has tons of production values and it's a huge AAA game and it's sold as big as it is culturally, but you can talk about, like, you know, how the mechanics are flawed or how, like, the narrative or the themes are flawed. And I love that there's that kind of nuance, but I hate that so much of the audience is, like, not accepting of, like, nuanced discussion. It's like they don't want to examine the art that they take in. And that's okay. Like, that's totally okay. Like, sometimes you just want to play or read or watch something and not really think about it. And I think that that's totally okay. I think we all do that. But, you know, like, I'm looking forward to the next Hunger Games movie. I don't have any fucking illusion that's going to be a great fucking movie. But I like the books. I like the first movie. There's nothing more to say. I don't want to examine those or critically look at those or analyze them because there's nothing. It's just, they're fluff. There's nothing to really analyze there. But I like them. So I think it's okay. I think we all do it, and I think it's totally okay. But it's when that audience, like, pushes back on people who do, you know, where there's a level of vitriol that is really disappointing. Like, you know, it's fun to examine these things, and you shouldn't be upset that someone else wants to do that or someone else is doing that. I don't see how that impacts your enjoyment of the game. I actually did a collection video. I got a lot of thumbs down on that one. People were not happy with it. I talked about Grand Theft Auto. But the weird thing is, I said exactly what I said, like, last episode. It's flawed, but I really enjoy it. But that's not good enough. I didn't jerk it off under the table, so thumbs down. That's unfortunate. I wish more people, if they're not willing to examine the stuff that they play, then at least let the other people who want to, like, do it. I don't understand what you hope to gain by going, nuh-uh, the writing is really good.
You're wrong, Craig.
Yeah.
I feel like the people doing that, though, is like it's the same Call of Duty crowd that thinks that
Call of Duty is the pinnacle of gaming. The funny thing is, someone actually sent a comment saying that, like, I think you're confusing this with Call of Duty, and I'm like, they're not remarkably different, to be perfect. No, I mean, the biggest thing that people took umbrage with actually was the writing. That fact that I criticized. They're like, the writing, people have said, let's see, like, wonderful. They said it was wonderful. They said it was great. They said it was...
But is it Oscar worthy? That's what we got.
Yeah. This is the kind of hyperbole we had with Grand Theft Auto 4. And the funny thing is, if you ask people, like, say, like, 10 years ago, would they play Grand Theft Auto 4, no one would have said story. Nobody would have said story. Oh, I love the story. It's so gripping. Nobody would have said that. They go around beating the shit out of people and stealing cars. But now that somewhere some asshole, when Grand Theft Auto 4 came out and said, oh, this is Scorsese worthy, now everyone's like, wow, the stories are really good, aren't they? And it's unfortunate. Like, I'm not mad about that. I'm not mad that people thumb that down or they're arguing with me. I actually kind of feel bad for them. I kind of feel bad that, like, these people are in their teens or they're in their 20s. And for them, Grand Theft Auto is, like, the height of fiction for them. And I'm like, man, that sucks. That's, you know, like, watch some good movies. Read some good books, man. There's some good stuff out there. If you think this is great, okay. But yeah, that's a really limited perspective, I feel like. That's unfortunate. I feel bad for someone who thinks that's like that's great. Mm-hmm. But I think it comes from a place where people want to legitimize games. You know what I mean? Where if I criticize the writing, let's say they realize that the writing is bad, they own up to the fact that the writing is bad. I think in their eyes that might delegitimize the game as art or as an accomplishment or whatever, and sort of like lessen its impact. And I think they want games, or even in general, or Grand Theft Auto 5 specifically, to be held up, you know, as this great thing. And they don't want our great thing to be something to be criticized as having bad writing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but it's unfortunate because video games are multifaceted, and just because I've even seen some movies where I didn't think the story was great or told great, but maybe the cinematography is really good or the acting is really good.
Oh, absolutely. No, that's a good point. No, absolutely.
There's other things I could pick out within it and still enjoy the movie overall, or maybe even just think the movie's just okay.
Right.
But even though I could criticize some aspects of it, that doesn't mean the entire project is flawed.
Right.
Well, that's inherent to calling it an art form. It's got to be open to critique then.
Yeah.
Of both positive and negative.
Absolutely. And I think it's limiting. Like, I think that for folks like this, and I don't want to generalize too much, but, you know, these people do exist, you know, they feel like it limits games if you own up to the fact that many of them, I feel like most games are pretty crude when it comes to writing a narrative still. Like, they're barely above, like, cave drawings. And, you know, they feel like it limits games if you own up to that. But I feel like saying a game has an excellent writing when it doesn't, that limits games. Like, that, we should strive to be better than that. We should, mm-hmm. You know, I feel like if you look at Grand Theft Auto and you say, like, oh, that has wonderful writing, fuck, god damn it. Now everyone's going to be trying to emulate that, and everyone's going to say, that's it. That's our pinnacle right there. That's what we're shooting for. That's the goalpost. And the goalpost is so fucking low that it's going to take us forever to get past that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's going to be a whole bunch of new GTA clones popping up now since this game did, man. Bank.
Yeah.
Sales.
I mean, I don't even know. Like, I think a lot of people thought writing just ended at dialogue. Oh, the dialogue's great. I'm like, the dialogue is hammy and cheesy. You know, it's not that great. But writing is not just the dialogue. The writing is, you know, it's the situations, it's the scenarios, it's the, mm-hmm. the plot development, it's the character development, the character arcs. Man, I don't know what the fuck the plot is to GTA. I mean, I'm not done with it, I'm getting there, but I can't tell you what the plot is. I don't think there really is a plot. And as for character development, there's, like, zero. There are no arcs to these characters. So, yeah, maybe they say the N-word a lot. And you're right, dude. People say N-word in real life. wow, well written, but there really is no story there. There's nothing happening. And that's okay. Like, I don't want to harp on GTA specifically for this because a lot of games do that. So there's no grand fault in GTA, you know, specifically for doing that when it's such a common thing. I'm just sort of frustrated that the conversation tends to end, hits a brick wall because there's such a huge part of the audience that says, nope, great writing, done, this is it, it's over. No conversation to be had here. And this is the best we have to offer. And I'm like, yeah, well, we got a little ways to go. But I can't emphasize enough, I still really enjoy the game. Like, I'm still playing it. I didn't play Grand Theft Auto 4 this much. I fucking shelled that game so quick.
There's much more wrong with that game than just the story.
Right.
Yeah.
And I still can't, I still really can't qualify the things I like about GTA 5. Like, I can complain on end about the things I don't like. They're so much easier to deconstruct, but the game does come together in a way that there are really enjoyable elements. And I don't know what the fuck they are, but I'm still liking it. Like, I really like it. I can't deny that. I gotta eat crow. I didn't think I would, but I do. And I guess that's mostly it. Just mostly Grand Theft Auto, a little bit of Kingdom Hearts and Buck Bumble. So, I guess we can wrap up this episode. Does anyone have anything they'd like to add?
Getting dizzy.
That's what happens when I drink.
I'm three beers deep.
Two.
Jeremy, do you have any projects, websites, Twitter accounts, anything you'd like to pitch?
Well, like I said earlier, I don't have any projects yet, but I'm working on them. So I guess for now, everyone can just follow me on Twitter. It's JerBear1218. JERBER.
All right. That wraps up.
Like, while we got Jeremy here, I would like to thank him very much for the t-shirt he got me at PAX.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah, I'm super jealous. It's awesome. Man.
It was actually a lot easier to get than I thought it was going to be. Because basically the way you got those shirts was they had this like Zelda quest set up where you were supposed to go to like you had to hit like four different points throughout the convention and get a stamp at each one. And, like, one was, like, play the demo. One was, like, write a note to the developers or whatever. It was kind of stupid shit. But they were... The whole point was they were giving out 500 shirts each day. But you could fill out the card one day and then just go first thing in the morning the next day and get a shirt. So they made it seem like there was, like, a rush to get everything done. But I just did everything at the end of the day when there were no lines, and then I went the next day and picked up three shirts.
Wow, that's awesome. No.
Damn.
Yeah, they go
well,
for
however easy
bucks,
or difficult it may have been, I do really appreciate it, since not being there, it was much more difficult for me to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem, man.
Yeah, I looked on eBay for one of those. They're like $50.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. And Jeremy's like, cha-ching! He's got little dollar signs in his eyes.
Well, I got three of them. One for me, one for Chris, and one for Sully. So, yes.
Well, is that it? We good?
We good.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank Jeremy for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And until next time, you guys take it easy.
Boy. No.